Come to order. First bill we're going to do is House File 525, David. Representative David. And the chair will move House File 525 for consideration for inclusion in the committee report. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 525 is a very simple bill. It simply extends the sunset on emergency medical service special taxing districts. We would like to go forever, but this bill would extend it for 2 years. It's worked very well, and the ambulance services in rural Minnesota feel they need to continue this. Appreciate your support.
Any questions for Representative Davis? Anybody in the audience that wishes to speak either for or against House File 525?
Mr. Chairman?
I am Representative Davis.
O.J. Doyle, on behalf of the Ambulance Association, I've been working with him on this bill. He supports it, and the people that oppose it, I told them that the meeting's tomorrow. No, I'm not aware of any opposition.
Yeah, that would be a real good move, Representative Davis. Hearing no opposition, then the chair will lay over House File 525 for possible inclusion in the report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
I think that was a little too easy, Representative Davis, but you're good. Okay, I see Representative Ruth, so the next bill we'll take up is House File 2372. And Representative Simpson, do you want to move the bill?
Yes, sir. I will move House File 2372, possible inclusion.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Actually, we have seen this one before, so I'm thankful to come back. Simon Industries, and I have E.J. Simon next to me, but we'll be talking in a minute, but is proposing to build and operate a 325-megawatt combined cycle and facility. They'll be using gas-turbine generators fueled by natural gas on a site in Waseca County. And this is for a tax exemption on the personal property tax imposed on the generating equipment in the plant. Also, we do have a verbal amendment, if I might, to the bill. And that would be on line 21. And to delete 1 mile and insert 2 miles.
Okay.
If someone can move that. We're thinking that 1 mile might not be quite enough, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Ms. Baker's going to write it up and repeat that for us.
And again, on line 21, it would be to delete 1 mile and insert 2 miles instead.
I think I can do that. Chair will move the amendment that on line 21, delete 1 mile and insert 2 miles. Oh, we don't have Representative Ruth, we don't have a quorum yet, so we'll hopefully remember to come back to that.
Okay.
Continue.
With that, then I would like to have E.J. Simon talk about the initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Simon Industries and its partner, Black Hills Corporation, is once again pleased to come back before you with our Waterville project.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
My name is E.J. Simon. I'm the CEO and president of Simon Industries, Inc.
Thank you.
Yes. The proposed facility, once again, is located in Waseca, northern county of Waseca, in the Blooming Grove Township. It's a proposed 325-megawatt combined cycle facility utilizing natural gas fuel only, and it resides on CenterPoint Energy's underground natural gas storage facility in northern Waseca County. We have worked very closely with the community as well as Black Hills Corporation to restate our project, and we're seeking, of course, the personal property tax exemption for this particular facility. The facility will maintain the same aesthetics of our originally proposed plant, and once again, we'll utilize local and union labor for the construction and operation of the facility in Waseca. We have presented to the commissioners as well as the Blooming Grove Township and have full support of our plant, and hopefully we can get the same here at the tax committee.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against the bill? Ms. Baker, is there anything about this that's any different from any of the other ones we've done?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, this is a pretty standard exemption for the personal property.
Representative Lynchewski.
Chair, I don't actually have a question about this bill, but similar bills.
Okay.
That's where you're going with asking if this is any...
that's where I was going.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Vandeveer. Just, I know Representative Rukavina will be here. I think he's working on something related to this, but he had mentioned his House File 1206, very similar to the 1691 that's on today for Westrum. But I did note that Representative Ruth has a bill that's basically the same thing as another project that Representative Fritz has, which is House File 431. And I had gone and checked with her that she had had a hearing request, and I'm just wondering if there will be time later this week to take up similar bills. Okay.
We heard it already.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Okay, what about Representative Rukavina? Do you know? Just wondering, because I know you're not having your committee meet the rest of this week. Would you be able to hear it next week?
Yeah, we've heard. We haven't heard Representative Rukavina's yet.
That's what he said this morning. He'll be here.
What's the House file?
1206.
Oh, I guess Representative Rukavina's, Mr. Stone said, is a sales tax exemption.
Like Westrum's, yeah.
Like Westrum's.
Right.
Okay.
Just raising the question. I know Representative Rukavina will be here, but I just was wondering kind of how you were proceeding with similar bills for the year.
And that's... Okay. We'll look into that, Representative Lucheski. We do have a quorum, and I think we can do the amendment now for 2372. Page 1, line 21. Delete 1 mile and insert 2 miles. Any discussion? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adopted. Any other questions for Representative Ruth? Did you have any other comments?
This is a facility that we were actually going to build earlier, but it was 45 megawatts and is now going to be 325 megawatts, so we'll employ about 17 to 25 people. So it will be a boost for the area and as well as the added electric generation for Southern Minnesota. So it will be great for all of Southern Minnesota, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. And House File 2372 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee report. Pardon me. As amended.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The next bill we'll consider is House File 1691. Westrum, who's Representative Westrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Westrum. The chair will move House File 1691 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a an extension of a provision that we've given the fiberwatt turkey litter plant, as many people have heard it called, an extension of their exemption of a personal property tax or utility property tax. This is a measure that every utility construction plant in the last 10 years at least, I believe, has been granted. The project hasn't been completed. It is underway, and we just would ask for an extension of that provision. The other provision that we would ask for is exempting the sales tax that was in statute and back 4 or 5 years ago, and the project for various reasons didn't come to fruition as fast as we had anticipated it would, and we would ask for that sales tax exemption for the project as well. Mr. Strickler here is here, and I'll let him just give you a quick update that the project is underway, and construction has begun now, and we'd ask you for consideration on both of those. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Strickler is from Fiberwatt. Why don't we have him just give you a brief update?
Thank you, Representative Westrom.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Carl Strickler. I'm a vice president of Fiberman. We're the company that's building, as Representative Westrom mentioned, a 50-megawatt biomass power plant in Benson that will be fueled with poultry litter. I thank the members and Mr. Chairman for the opportunity to speak on House File 1691. But before getting into specifics, I'd just like to give a quick update on the project. As I mentioned, it's a nominal 50-megawatt power plant that's going to burn turkey litter as its primary fuel. It's going to be built in Benson, which is located in the heart of the turkey-growing region in Minnesota. The output will be sold to NSP, which helps them meet their obligation to purchase 110 megawatts of biomass power under the biomass mandate. All the required permits and approvals have been obtained. In spite of the extensive permitting delays that we encountered, last year we put in place a $200 million financing package with a group of insurance companies led by Prudential and John Hancock. And we commenced construction of this project on December 10th of 2004. Today, the design and construction of the fibering facility is more than 10% complete. Engineering and design activities are well underway. We've purchased all the major equipment, such as the boiler, the turbine generator, air pollution control equipment, and steam condenser. And on-site construction is expected to resume in the next couple of weeks. With a two-year construction period, we expect initial generation to start in early 2007, perhaps even as early as the end of 2006. And by the summer of 2007, we will expect the plant output to be up to full load. Although the development process was unexpectedly long, frustrating, and expensive, Fiberman remained committed to making this Fiberman project a reality. Now, with respect to the two bills in front of you, these are two tax exemptions that the state legislature previously granted, but has now expired. One is an exemption for the utility personal property tax that was granted in 2003. Although we believe we started construction required to meet the deadline stipulated in the statute, at the time poor weather prevented us from doing more than installing a fence and conducting some preliminary site work. A reason for requesting this exemption again is to eliminate any question of whether the project met the requirements of starting construction as a result of our need to suspend on-site construction activities during the winter. The other provision of this bill extends an exemption for sales and use tax on construction materials that the state legislature granted in 2001 but expired in December 2002. We're asking to extend these utility, personal property tax, and sales and use tax exemptions not only because they were previously granted, but also because they're one of the building blocks that helped us provide the lowest price of any of the projects approved under the biomass mandate. Additionally, tax exemptions like these have also been granted to power projects like ours. These projects include
the St. Paul District Energy Cogeneration Project, the Northern Alternative Energy, LS Power, Great River Energy, and Tenasca Power. Lastly, Farmer will be bringing $200 million of private money that will be invested in the state, making this one of the largest investments in West Central Minnesota in years. It is important to note this project will result in new tax revenues for the state. Specifically, Farmer will pay corporate income tax. Construction workers and our employees will pay payroll taxes and income tax on their wages. And companies that provide goods and services to the project will add increased tax revenues attributable to the Fiberman project. Swift County, School District 777, and the City of Benson, the beneficiaries of the utility personal property tax, all have passed resolutions supporting this tax exemption for the Fiberman plant. The taxing authorities will benefit in other ways, including the addition of 29 permanent jobs once the plant is up and running. 300 Minnesota building trades construction jobs will also be created. $8 to $10 million in annual revenue that will be spent locally, and real estate taxes will be paid by Fiberman. The state of Minnesota will also benefit from the extra power produced by this plant in an environmentally sound way. When our power plant produces electricity, the reduction of carbon dioxide going to the atmosphere will be equivalent to taking 500,000 cars off of Minnesota roads. Carbon dioxide is the main contributor to global warming. The Fiberman project also benefits Minnesota's poultry industry by providing a year-round alternative used for litter generated from the rearing of turkeys. Clearly, the Fiberman project is both sustainable and renewable, and is the type of project that we think should be encouraged and supported. It will also be the first of its kind in the U.S. It will dramatically and positively alter the future of agricultural and energy community in Minnesota and other forward-looking states. Again, thank you for giving me the opportunity to brief you on our project and to talk about House File 1691. And, of course, I'm available to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Representative Rucavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, you've got a very good project here, and, you're helping to meet the mandate from the Prairie Island initiatives. But Mr. Chair, I also have, and I just went to my office to check, but I put a hearing request in for a similar type bill to also meet the mandate of the Virginia and Hibbing Biomass Project, and I know it's probably an oversight on your part that I'm not on the agenda today, but I was wondering, since it's almost the same, and I have a fiscal note just about similar to Representative Westrum's, our fiscal note for that project is about $470,000 the first year and $1.05 the second, because that's when they would do most of their work. The estimate is based on numbers that revenue got from Hibbing in Virginia, based on about $23 million of purchases that would be fall under this privy of this bill. So I'm wondering, Representative Westrum, if you would help make your bill even better by just accepting my House File 1026 as an amendment to your bill.
Representative Rick Davina.
Representative.
I've been supportive of your bill as well.
Very supportive.
I'm not on your I'm not on this committee, so it's not my amendment to call it a friendly amendment. But I think your project has got merit as well, and helps fill part of the other biomass mandate.
I believe, Mr. Chair and members, that Representative Westrum and I, our projects together would meet the mandate and would be the final piece of the puzzle. But you could correct me if I'm wrong on that, Representative Westrum. But
Representative Rucavina, which bill are you talking about?
I'm talking about House File 1206, excuse me, 1026 is the other part of this.
Representative Rucavina, 1206 is in full tax committee. We don't have the bill. I'm not certain why.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's exactly the same as this bill, which puzzled me as to why I wasn't getting a hearing. But, I'm sure that, Mr. Chair, anything is germane in this committee, and since it is exactly the same, we could just offer it and put it on this bill, which would help.
You can offer an amendment, Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I would move then that we add the language of Roosevelt. What is it again? I can't see my new glasses. 1206.
Do you want help, Representative Rucavina?
Pardon me?
You said you can't see with your new glasses. I could help you. Maybe.
You probably could, Representative Westrum. You probably could. Am I blushing, Representative Westrum?
You look
good. First time ever. Members, I told Representative Westrum once that I was 6 foot tall, and he said, "Why is your voice coming from the floor?" So he figured that one out in a hurry.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Rokovina, I'm not biased either way. I mean, if your amendment going on is going to impact my bill negatively, Mr. Chair, then I have concerns. But I don't have concerns with Representative Rokovina's bill.
Representative Rokovina, the reason I think this is here and yours isn't is the personal property tax. Are personal tax exemptions here on the personal property
personal utility property.
Yeah. So I think while you could try and do this, I think it might be better. Mr. Stone says there's a whole bunch of sales tax exemptions that are going to be heard in the full committee.
Mr. Chair, maybe for Mr. Stone or whoever, are there similar electrical generating exemptions, or would they just be a general sales tax exemption for a public construction project?
Mr. Stone, do you know?
Or staff maybe could help.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rokovina, a couple of the bills have both property tax and sales tax exemptions in them. Like, for instance, Representative Westrom's bill and Representative Ellington's bill. But Representative Ruth's bill was just property tax exemptions. So it's kind of a mixture. Some of them have both, and some just have one.
Mr. Chair, of course, why there's no property exemption for my bill is because they're public utilities.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, what I was going to say is I think there are several bills similar to yours for construction facility exemptions of different types that are in other bills, not necessarily just for utility, but I think there's quite a few different construction sales tax exemptions, and maybe that's why that was held. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, as Representative Rokovina said, I believe that one wouldn't be subject to and somebody could correct me, but the utility personal property tax, because it's a local unit of government, municipal owned facility. But I'm not sure on that, but I know they're waived from most other property taxes too. Ms. Baker, do you know?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum, I'm sorry I didn't quite hear your question, but I do think there's one other issue that might need to be addressed in this municipal utilities, is because if you form a MPA, and I'm not sure if that's what this is forming, you do have to exempt yourself from an in-lieu tax as well, because although they aren't under the property tax statutes, they're exempt from 272. There's another provision that catches them in an in-lieu payment that is equivalent to what the property tax is. So we should look at that to make sure that it also gets exempted from that.
Representative Westrum, comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, on the amendment portion, I said my piece as far as I don't have a problem with Representative Rokovina's bill. If it would really be up to your discretion and Mr. Stone's insight as to whether this would be helpful in moving it along, or if you want to talk with Representative Rokovina on when those bills may come up for hearings. Obviously I'm biased. I want my bill to go forward, and Representative Peterson's bill, the two of us are carrying this together. So if it's any way going to harm my bill, of course, then I want my bill to go clean, but I don't know why it would if his amended on.
Well, Representative
Westrum, the Tax Committee is considering both of the bills anyway.
Since it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion, I don't know that it makes much difference, so...
I support, you know, I supported the Prairie Island legislation. I think it's great what Representative Westrom is trying to do with, you know, what could potentially be an environmental problem, turning it into a energy plus for the state, and we're trying to do the same, and I would hope you consider it now, and if there's a problem with the chair of the full committee, we could look at it later, but it'd be nice to get it in here and all make me feel more comfortable, and I'm wholeheartedly supporting Representative Westrom.
So how do we do that, Ms. Speaker? Do we just move the bill, the whole thing, as an amendment, or...
Mr. Chair, I would just move that 1206 be incorporated into Representative Westrom's House file 1691.
Representative Rukavina, we're going to lay over the layover to get copies of the bill so that the members have it. Before we do the amendment, and do you have any other? Well, before we do that, do you have any other testimony, Representative Westrom? Maybe we can.
I don't.
Okay. Do the members have any?
No, questions? Mr. Chair. If there's members that have any questions on my bill, maybe that should be entertained. But otherwise, we don't have any. We've got more people that can answer questions if they come up, but nobody that needs to testify. And as I said just a little bit ago, Representative Peterson is actually the legislator who has this in his district. I used to represent part of Swift County, which is where Benson is located. I've been interested and supportive of this project for many years and excited to see it come to fruition. And in my district borders Swift County right now, and so Representative Bud Heidgerkins borders Swift County, and so there's several of us that have a very large interest into seeing this project come to full circle and start producing renewable energy for our state.
Thank you. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, for you or your gentleman that's testifying with you, I was just wondering, you know, the construction, prevailing wage isn't an issue for you on this, is it, sir?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I didn't quite hear the question.
I was saying, I assume you're paying prevailing wage in your construction project, and that isn't a problem for you at all.
We have a labor agreement with the Minnesota Building Trades that... So it's not a prevailing wage job, it's a Minnesota Building Trades.
Fine, that's great, Mr. Chair. Good job, Representative Westman.
I'll leave that one alone, Representative Rukavina.
Representative Rukavina, I'm told that this would also fit on the Ellison bill, and then we would have copies. Do you have copies of your revenue note?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Does it matter if you do your amendment here or on the next bill? Or?
Well, being a member of the minority, I'd feel much better being on Representative Westrom's bill. Although I could go with my coon from Minneapolis, too. We could put it on both, Mr. Chair.
My primary concern is that you feel good, Representative Rukavina.
I'm feeling 5.5 feet tall.
Mr. Chair, I'm open to your wishes.
Representative Westrom, I think because it's just going to be laid over that it's not going to have any impact on your bill at all, whether we put it on or whether we don't. So, but we can't do it right this minute. That's the problem. So, okay. All right. The chair will move the minutes of the April 14th meeting. Have members had a chance to look at those? Any additions or deletions? Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the April 14th minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted.
Well, Mr. Chair, can we move on to the other bills, and Representative Weston's bill can then just be taken care of when you see what the fiscal note in the bill looks like? Because Representative Weston's done an excellent job explaining wonderful bill. And move it forward.
Okay. Representative Rukavina, do you want to discuss your bill, including the revenue notes, so that we, Representative Westrom also has that information?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the revenue note is based on the numbers received from Virginia and Hibbing Public Utilities of $23.5 million of taxable purchases by those two. Basically, their power plants are burning coal now. The coal will be taken offline. They will burn waste wood. Representative Westrom's heard the bill in his committee and supports it. Xcel Energy has agreed to purchasing price, I believe, of 10.2 cents a kilowatt. And it's a $90 million project because they're just retrofitting the boilers that burn coal now to be able to burn waste wood. And everything's in place, much like Representative, it's almost the same as Representative Westrom's bill as far as Xcel being on board. There was a little bit of a transmission issue that I believe is taken care of in another bill and that Commerce has agreed to look at, and Representative Westrom is much more well-versed than me on that. But otherwise, that's the bill. It retains... the good thing about this bill, similar to St. Paul, Virginia and Hibbing both supply steam heat to local homes and businesses. Matter of fact, the community college up there, the courthouse in Virginia, is all on steam heat, the hospital. And this retains about 65 jobs in Virginia and keeps the steam heat efficient. And in Hibbing, I think there's like 40-some jobs, and there'll be about 100 jobs created in the woods for moving the waste wood to a site by the Hibbing Airport, where then both community power plants can access that waste wood. And that's about the bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And both Representative Westrom and Representative Rukavina, you have good projects. I'm just kind of just jumping back to a question that you asked Representative Westrom regarding the prevailing wage in the construction trades. If he had answered that differently, would your will to go on his bill have changed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, no. I was concerned about the prevailing wage, which in Minnesota, if you get, I believe, it's over $250,000 a project that it's supposed to kick in prevailing wage laws. I just wanted to know if that was the case. And when they told me that a labor management agreement had been signed with building trades, that made me just feel even better. And, of course, being an Iron Range project, this whole thing will be union built, too. Should have given you a thin one instead of the one that's scribbled on.
Really? So this isn't, there's no ending to it? Representative Rukavina, on 1206, there's no ending date on the exclusion?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Were you aware of that?
There is no, what, would you repeat that again?
Expiration date.
There's no expiration date.
Sunset.
Sunset.
So on the exemption?
Yes.
We thought that this would take place in the 06 and 07 fiscal years. Mr. Chair, we can put a closing date on this just as when I get some assurances that construction period will work.
It's for any improvement or expansion, so seemingly this could go on.
Yeah, and it wasn't intended to be that way. So, Mr. Chair, I would move to amend it, but I don't know what a safe period would be.
Representative, there's a lot we don't know about this. Bill, are you sure you want to do this now?
Mr. Chair, I think this bill has been through many committees, including Representative Westrom's, and I mean, there's nothing more to know about it. It's the same as some of the other bills moving through here as far as the sales tax or the tax issue is concerned. I'm more than willing to put a dates. Does staff have any advice on similar to the other bills? Or is there a time period? Ms. Dalton, is there a time period on the other bills?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'm not really sure where your project is in its construction cycle. If it's got all of its permits, I would think that giving it a four-year window should probably be adequate. Otherwise, there would be other projects down the road that could qualify under this exemption.
Mr. Chair, I would accept that language then as a January 31st of 08. Is that the way I should do it? Or
Mr. Chair, my recommendation would be that on page 1, line 21, before the period, insert and before December 31st, 2009. That would give you 4 years.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. And Mr. Chair, I would just incorporate that into the amendment.
Yes,
not 2008.
I'm sorry.
2008.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
2008.
And would it also be, it wouldn't be needed on page 2 then, because that's just the effective date. So,
Representative Rukavina incorporates the amendment into his amendment.
And page 3 and page 2.
Do we have the
correct
language now? Okay. To the Rukavina amendment. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's anybody on this committee that's against what Representative Rukavina is doing, and certainly not against what Representative Westrom is doing, but it seems like a little bit of mass confusion at the front of the table here, and I really think this should be laid over and looked at it at the next bill here. Let's get a little more information. I'm just wondering what's going on.
Well,
Mr. Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simpson, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, it's the same type of exemption, and you see the fiscal note, which is a little more than the one I'm looking at for Representative Westrom's, which is $900,000, and ours is, which I don't understand how ours can be bigger since it's a much smaller project, but for whatever reason, our fiscal note's about $1.5 million. Other than that, there's absolutely really no difference between the bills. Even actually not only in the sales tax exemption, Representative Simpson, but in what the bills are accomplishing as far as meeting the mandates from the 95 Prairie Island legislation.
Representative Simpson.
Well, this revenue note that was handed out to us is exactly, this is Representative Westrom's fiscal note. So what's the point? I already have it.
Well, Ms. Dalton, you have I have a question on the revenue note. Or you have a comment on this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I briefly looked at the revenue note for Representative Rukavina's bill, and it makes a slightly different assumption, which is that the capital equipment would be taxable unless we granted the sales tax exemption, whereas Representative Westrom's bill makes the assumption that the capital equipment would qualify for the capital equipment exemption.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, capital equipment only qualifies if it is purchased by the user, and by granting this exemption for the equipment in both bills, and it is identical language in both bills, it essentially keeps them from having to jump through hoops of having separate contracts for the building versus buying the equipment. They can do what's called a turnkey construction. Both bills have the same thing. One bill assumed that absent this language, that there would, one revenue estimate assumes that absent this language, they wouldn't do a current turnkey construction, and the other bill, Representative Rukavina's, assumes that absent this language, they would continue to do a turnkey construction, and the whole thing would be taxable, and that's why his revenue estimate is significantly higher.
Representative Rukavina, I know the bill's in the full committee, and Representative Krenke's here now, so, but I think I would ask that we hold off on this today. I mean, we can vote on it if you want, but...
Mr. Chair, that's fine. If that's your recommendation, you know, I'm not going to try to screw up Representative Westrom's exemption, and if that's...
Well, it's just, we've got a lot of other bills.
There seems to be concern here, but I don't know what it's about, because it's exactly the same as my bill, but... Being that you're showing concern, I will withdraw the amendment. And
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Dalton, why are the assumptions different? I guess if we have two bills that are exactly the same, doing pretty much the same thing, why are the revenue assumptions different? I don't understand that.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina's bill makes that assumption, I think, because it specifically allows for a refund provision that the purchaser, that the tax is paid at the time of the sale, and then the contractor gives the information on the sales tax paid to the ultimate owner of the facility, and they apply for a refund. And Representative Westrom's is an upfront exemption, but the result is under both, you could do a turnkey facility. So I'm not sure why they did the revenue estimates differently, and I think we just need to discuss it with them and get it clarified.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a follow-up. It just seems to me that these discussions are very interesting rather informative, but it seems to me that we would probably all be better served by putting some standards in place in a way that covered all of these, as opposed to nickeling, diming ourselves into oblivion, which just seems to be what we're doing here today and trying to discuss the differences and assumptions and things like that. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I would just encourage you to look at, when you're putting the committee bill together, to look at the whole idea behind the bills that are here today and how we could fix the issue in a more wide-ranging approach as opposed to trying to do one here or there or another place. It seems that it would be better to set some standards in place altogether.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Riccovina.
Mr. Chair, I withdrew the amendment.
You did.
Okay. Out of respect for my good friend, Representative Westman.
Okay, Representative Riccovina withdraws his amendment. Further discussion on House File 1691. Seeing none, the bill is laid over for possible inclusion in the committee report. Thank you, Representative Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Riccovina and committee members. So.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 2413, Representative Ellison. And Representative Riccovina.
Chair, I'll move bill in House File 2413. I'll move it for possible inclusion in the subcommittee report. And I'm wondering if you accept my bill as a friendly amendment to this one more easily than you would the last Republican colleague of yours.
Representative
that might tip us off as to what your intentions are.
Representative Riccovina, Representative Ellison can put the bill in whatever shape he'd like to.
No objection to that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Riccovina moves the language from House File.
Well, Mr. Chair, no. Representative Riccovina already made his motion for today and saw. So I'll just leave it alone for now and request a hearing with the committee here at a later date. Or since it's in Representative Krenke's full committee, I'll just go there and rely on the fairness of my good friend, longtime colleague.
Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing House File 2413. I believe there is an amendment to have the bill in the shape that we needed it in, and I was informed that you or another one of our good committee persons will be moving that. Is that before you, sir?
We're going to take care of that as soon as I can. Okay. Representative Riccovina moves the H 2413A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adopted. Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this House File 2413 is a straightforward bill. It asks for an extension of an exemption. We are trying to have a hydroelectric plant built in the city of Minneapolis, and because of some negotiating issues on siting, there have been a few delays, and we're asking for the extension to be moved forward by about 2 years, from January 1st, 2005 to January 1st, 2007. I do have Mr. Bob Hinches with me, who can explain the bill in even greater detail, but the committee has passed the property tax exemption in the past, and due to some delays, we just need a little more time, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Ellison. And you have a testifier?
I do, Mr. Hinches. The testifier is Mr. Bob Hinches, who will elaborate a little bit further.
Mr. Chair, members,
Mr. Hinches.
My name is Bob Hinches. I represent the Crown Hydro Company. With me today also is Tom Griffin with Crown Hydro. Crown Hydro is planning to build a 3.2 megawatt electricity generation facility in the Crown Roller Mill, which is on the west side of the Mississippi River near St. Anthony Falls. The Crown Roller Mill was one of the generators, still has the original turbine wells from when there were, I think, almost three dozen flour mills down by St. Anthony Falls at the turn of the 20th century. And the power for those mills was provided by Crown Roller Mill and other generation facilities. The Crown Hydro facility will have two turbines and generate 20 million kilowatt hours of electricity, which is enough to serve 2,000 residents with alternative energy. The total cost of the project is about $8.2 million. Crown Hydro received its Federal Energy Regulatory Commission license in 1999 to build the facility in the Crown Roller Mill. For a few years, Crown Hydro and the Minneapolis Park Board were talking about moving the facility to the Mill Ruins Park, which is nearby. Those efforts were unsuccessful. Now Crown Hydro is completing negotiations for a lease in the original site, the Crown Roller Mill. The legislature previously granted Crown Hydro a sales tax exemption on construction supplies and materials, as well as a personal property tax exemption. Both those have expired. House File 2413 reinstates those tax exemptions.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 2413? Seeing none, House File 2413 is laid over for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Ellison, would you like to take up House File 1835?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Lincheski, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. Is it 1835 or 36?
36. Okay. Representative Lincheski moves House File 1836 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, I have a short oral amendment to House File 1836, if I may present it to the committee at this time.
Okay. Yes.
On page 1, line 18, after the word projects, insert or the language or accept a lead safe certification by a licensed risk assessor. And I have written out the, I have it written here for
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that oral amendment.
Representative Lynchvesky moves the oral amendment. Could you repeat that for us, Ms. Baker?
You didn't
do that. Could you repeat?
Sorry, repeat it? Page 1, line 18, after projects, insert the language or accept a lead safe certification by a licensed risk assessor. And I do have it in writing right here if it would be helpful.
Do members have the amendment? Okay. Okay, all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted. One question, Representative Ellison, did you want to keep that date, April 1st, 2004? Page 1, line 24.
I think we would like to amend that to 2005, Mr. Chair.
Chair will move line 24, page 1, delete 2004 and insert 2005. Any discussion? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adopted. Representative Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Mr. Chair, members, I'm bringing forth House File 1836 in order to enlist the assistance of the private sector in the fight to eliminate elevated blood lead levels in children. At this point, we're fighting the elevated blood lead levels we're finding in the youth, mostly through federal grants that we're receiving, which we then use to go in, try to fix the lead hazard in the home, and provide some medical treatment to the children. But we don't have enough money to fix all the lead problems that we're finding, so this bill would actually provide a very small incentive to property owners to remediate lead in their own property. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is first of all, show the community members the metro area. I wish I could show the whole state, because in many of the older homes in our state all over, we have old lead paint on the walls. You can see this is Minneapolis, and you see the concentrations in North and South Minneapolis. This is my district right here. You see this black spot right here? We have a lot of lead problem, elevated lead level cases there. And as you can see, as we fan out across the metro, there are cases, but they get more sparse as we move from the first, second, and then the far west. Does everybody see that? The city of Minneapolis map, you can see the blue, all the blue dots. These are not just pieces of blue ink on a sheet. These are children with elevated blood lead levels. Now, I know many, what lead does has gotten into the public lexicon somewhat, but I would just like to tell you that a child who is harmed with elevated blood lead levels can experience a 15-point reduction in IQ and can have serious problems with impulsivity. Impulsivity and which leads to involving the criminal justice system. This is my district, my neighborhood right here. All these orange houses are houses where you have elevated blood lead levels. Many of us, as we discussed in education committee, the learning gap folks have heard about, we think this is a culprit. We've got to do something about this. I'd just like to let you know that for about 70 years in our country, the lead industry used its product in paint because it was durable and helpful and made the paint more consistent and had properties that made the paint last longer. But what we found out in the course of this is that the lead was a neurotoxin, and as you would as the paint would get old and flake, children would ingest it and would be severely infected thereby. There used to be cases where children actually died from it. Now we don't see too many deaths, but we see serious problems in learning development and impulsivity and things like that. With me today is a representative of the City of Minneapolis Lead Program, who I'd like to ask if she could be allowed to share a few thoughts about lead and what we're trying to do about it.
Lisa Smithstead, City of Minneapolis Lead Hazard Control Program, Chairman, Representatives. The City of Minneapolis experiences 350 new poisoned children every year, and that's just in the last 5 years. Prior to this, we've had numbers as high as 1,500 children poisoned a year, and we still have a lot of properties out there that contain lead hazards. Property owners, the cost for lead hazard reduction on a house that can permanently change the availability of lead paint dust range from $3,000 to $15,000, depending on whether it is a lead hazard reduction project or a full abatement project. And property owners desperately need help in finding resources to help them with the costs of removing these hazards permanently from the reach of children.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I also have Gene Ranieri here who can explain the mechanics of the bill itself because it is evaluation exclusion. I just wanted to give the committee a sense of the serious nature of the problem we're trying to fix. And Mr. Ranieri from the City of Minneapolis can talk about exactly how the program would work if the chair has time for that.
Real quickly, could I just have one question, and maybe Mr. Ranieri would be the one to handle that. How much actual, do you have an idea of how much actual money this would mean to a property owner?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Director for the City of Minneapolis. Mr. Chairman, it would depend upon the amount of the exclusion. Say, for example, the maximum, I think, is $15,000. In terms of converting that into a tax capacity would be $150, and then by multiplying by a tax rate of, say, 1.5, it's about a $200 savings a year. Over 5 years, would be $1,000.
So, Mr. Ranieri, does the city have a position on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, we do support this legislation as part of our legislative program. $1,000 to abate paint, lead bait, would be very beneficial. Representative Ellison had talked about some of the benefits, hopefully help children in education, things of that nature. It sounds $200 sounds like a lot of money individually, but our tax base is well over $400 million. So an exclusion of $7,500 to $15,000 a year for maybe 100 units is not a big number, and it probably has better benefit than cost.
Thank you. Members have any questions? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandeveer. A question for Mr. Ranieri, I guess, on the mechanics. So if I'm reading the bill correctly, the exclusion works for 5 years. That's how you get to the $1,000. But it also says in the revenue note that the valuation exclusion terminates upon sale of the property. Why wouldn't you have the 5 years stick with the property till the 5 years done if there's a sale in between? And then similarly, so why not do the full 5 years, regardless of there's a sale, and why not have the exclusion stop after 5 years, even if someone stays there for 30 years? I'm not understanding what the sale of the property is being linked to the valuation exclusion.
Representative Ellison.
We have a moment here, Mr. Chairman.
Very good question. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, I think I'm not aware why the sale is linked. It could continue. I'm trying to think what happened in the former program, which I think was called this old house. I'm not sure if it's terminated then or not, so that may be the precedent. And I also think the precedent may be in this old house. It was 5 years also. So.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandeveer. Well, maybe Ms. Baker has a comment on that, but Mr. Ranieri and Representative Ellison, I think this is a great bill. I liked it when you introduced it before. We also have, I think, Representative Goodwin has a mold exclusion, which we heard that bill in this committee, and I think Representative Dabney has some 4D affordable housing issues where there's a counting the valuation a little different to preserve things not going to market rate housing. And so it's along that continuum of trying to use the valuation system to recognize certain problems. And so I do support that. I think the sale of the property thing is confusing, and I think it hurts your cause here, quite frankly, and I hope you'd consider taking it out.
Representative Lynchewski, was the Goodwin bill, was that very similar to this in the exclusion? Do you remember?
Mr. Chair, I don't. I was thinking about that, too. If that bill was silent on the sale, I don't recall, but I know Ms. Baker knows about this old house, but I'm just, if it's a good idea, I think you'd stick with the full 5 years no matter who owns it, and you would stop it once the 5 years are done, even if someone's been stays there for, you know, 4 decades. I don't know what the sale has to do with it.
Right. Well, one thing I'm wondering if these could, Ms. Faker might be able to comment on that. Did you have a comment on this? If they were doing it the same way, the mechanics?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lynchewski, two different points. One is that in this old house, the exclusion ended when the property was sold. And so I would guess that that's probably why this is done that way, and I see Mr. Barnhart shaking his head yes, so I assume that they did it in the same way. On the Representative Goodwin's bill, that was a completely different bill because this excludes value. So this value isn't taxed. Goodwin's bill had to do with, in effect, refunding or abating taxes and not when you have a mold issue and or it was like a fire or this was in that local option tax that could be refunded. In that case, we were talking about actual taxes in a short-run period while you were fixing up a house. And in her case, it was to add mold because mold isn't specifically mentioned. And it was, you know, it addresses right now, for instance, if you have a fire and have to leave your home. But the Anoka County assessor said, I don't read this, that if it's mold and you have to move out, that then you can use this abatement option. And so hers really, it's a completely different type of bill.
And what I think is if we were to do something like this, that they should be done identically and treated the same each type of problem. And this actually doesn't look like a real complicated thing. And it seems that Representative Ellison, if you talk to Representative Goodwin and work with Ms. Baker to have come up with an identical or similar treatment for the same, because they're similar issues, you know, that you're addressing. I think that would be helpful for the committee in considering this in the report. Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Karen and I were talking about this, and I think one of the maybe big differences between the two things is that in the mold situation, basically that house was unlivable mm-hmm. because of the mold situation, whereas I think this is more of an improvement to a house that you're living in, so it's a less sort of a catastrophic situation that might make it difficult to marry the two concepts.
Okay.
But that is, I think, a difference.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Ellison.
I was going to say that I have considered the point that Representative Lynchewski has made, think she's correct, and was wondering if I could, if the committee would entertain another amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move to actually delete on page 2 after the period on line 5 and up to and including the period on line 6. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, page 2, line
5. So. Okay, Representative
Ms. Baker, Ms. Ryan.
Looks like it.
Reference to it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll move that.
So, page 2, line Representative Rukavina moves that on page 2, line 5, delete the valuation, page 2, line 6, delete exclusion shall terminate upon the sale of the property. Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Ellis,
I just want to point out one other quick thing. Whenever a child has an elevated blood level, it's very common for city officials to go in and take everybody out of the house and then sand the house or do all kind of remediations, and it is absolutely unlivable while that remediation is going on. And before the remediation ever even takes place, you have small kids in there who are exposed to an ongoing lead hazard. I just thought I'd note that for the committee.
Well, Representative Ellison, I think that they are similar going back to the mold in that regard. I think there's a possibility that, you know, something could be worked out if they're similar, but we need to finish the amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted.
One last thing, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Okay, is there anyone else in the audience who'd care to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members, Tom Lehman here today on behalf of the National Paint and Coatings Association. I'll be very brief. I'm just here to say that the Paint Industry Manufacturers Association supports this legislation. It's a model that's based on what a number of other states have done. It does provide an incentive, although modest, still an incentive to property owners and to landlords to remediate their property, and that we think it's a positive step forward. We appreciate Representative Ellison carrying this legislation.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the department here who'd like to testify on the bill? Or anybody else? Okay. Questions from members? Okay. Seeing none, Chair will lay over House File 1836 for possible inclusion in the committee report as amended. And let's see. Here. All right, the next bill we'll take up is House File 1213, Representative Gunther. And Representative Nelson, would you like to move House File 1213?
With pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Nelson moves House File 1213 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1213 had a good resolution last session, but everybody knows what happened to the tax bill last session, so we're back again. And I have Martin County Commissioner Steve Pierce here, whose property that we're talking about that was that the TIF bill was changed, the TIF language was changed, and he was caught in the middle of it by restoring an historic old post office that he put back in regular order that the Historical Society wanted him to do. He did everything was asked, and then he found out that the financing he had in place wasn't valid anymore, and I'd certainly like to have him describe his problems to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. My name is Steve Pierce. I'm a certified public accountant in public practice. I'm also a county commissioner, as Representative Gunther mentioned. I was here before you last year, so try to be a little bit briefer. I had an opportunity in 2001 to do something that I've kind of dreamt about for a long time. There's an old post office in Fairmont, was built as a post office by the federal government in 1925, and they abandoned it in 2001 and put it up for sale. I didn't want to see this building tore down like so many others. So I had a dream to purchase it, plus put my office in it, seeing I lost my existing lease. And so I got together with the county and the city, and we're trying to figure out the finances. I soon found out that there is no money for historical projects in Minnesota unless you're nonprofit or residential. I had one opportunity, and that was tax increment financing. I don't know what you've got left from last year, what you've been presented, but in information from the county assessor back here, when this was put together in 2001, it was estimated the taxes to be $4,550 per year. In Fairmont, Martin County, we do tax increment projects for 9 years. We don't do them any longer. We think that's plenty. So the $4,550 times nine, I received a tax increment package that was for $50,000 for 9 years. It contemplated a zero base. Almost immediately at the same time, as Representative Gunther mentioned, the tax law changed in the state, so I lost the school district portion, which was taken over by the state. So be it. I have to live with that. There are no funds available for standalone pay-as-you-go projects of mine to cover that. So I live with that with everything else. When the project went to be certified with revenue, they came back and said, you don't get a zero base. And we kind of said, well, what? We had a similar project in Martin County a couple years early, being a Truman nursing home that went from nonprofit to for-profit, was purchased. A tax increment package was put together. Zero base was contemplated, applied for, and received. So I brought that up to revenue, and they said, well, things have changed. We didn't see that. We saw this. I met with revenue in 2003. Representative Gunther arranged it and said, your answer to this is to get special legislation. We can't do anything. So last year, there was legislation before you to get the zero base from a TIF angle, and the decision at that time, or thought it was more palatable to, rather than do mess with the TIF law, to just do a simple abatement. And that's what's before you today. The abatement is strictly relative to this property. It I'll still be paying the state general tax. As it stands now, I stand to gain about $17,000 out of the $50,000. That's what the TIF I'll get over the life. All we're trying to do here is to restore the initial 50 that was on the table and represented to me and that I got. The city of Fairmont has supported that. I don't know if you've got the letters, but this goes back from last year at a regular council meeting. The council passed a motion, supported the legislation, et cetera, signed by the mayor, all that sort of stuff. And when the abatement legislation, that brief summary that you've got, went back to the city for review last year, the city attorney raised the question about me being an elected official. I don't know why she didn't raise it with the TIF, but that's beside the point. So that's why the language was added relative to the elected official part. So that's in brief what it's about, and I'm taking any questions. That mentioned also, this is no dollars to the state. There's nothing to do there. It's non-revenue.
Okay, questions from members. Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandeveer. I just want to thank Representative Gunther for a new and improved bill this year. And I know, I hope Mr. Pierce understands what a gift Representative Gunther is to you and all the people who are supporting you and your community with this, because it's hard for many of us to stomach, quite frankly, but I know that Representative Gunther has worked long and hard over the last couple of years to make this as acceptable as it possibly could be to the tax committee, and I know that you've worked closely with many of us, and so I just wanted to thank you, Representative Gunther, for a better bill than we had originally seen, and I know you spent a lot of time on it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The chair will lay over House File 1213 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Thank you, Representative
Thank you
Gunther.
Very much.
Thank you.
Next bill is House File 630. Representative Wilkin. Is he here? Okay. Well, since Representative Wilkin isn't here, Representative Larson, House File 1247. Representative Marquardt, you want to move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1247.
Representative Marquardt moves House File 1247 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for taking the time to hear House File 1247. House File 1247 is an effort to provide the city of Richfield the tools to deal with a pretty unique impact. As many of you know, in October, the new runway at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport will open. And if you think, members, about just geographically to think about the location of that runway, if you were traveling south on Cedar Avenue, south of Highway 62 from Minneapolis, you'd be going through Richfield. And as you would look to your east, or to the left-hand side, you would see the airport. And that parallel to Cedar Avenue is where the new north-south runway is being constructed, very close to Cedar Avenue. As you look to the west, or to the right-hand side, is the city of Richfield and its eastern boundary, essentially between Highway 62 and 494. Members, to give you a little background regarding this legislation, this has been a work in progress for some time. If we go back to the year 2000, as legislators from this area have been trying to address the impacts that will occur as a result of the expansion of the runway, or expansion of the airport with this new runway, we've realized that the eastern border of the city of Richfield is especially vulnerable to the impacts of low-frequency noise, and that's the rumbling noise that one receives from airplanes that are as close as we are to the runway. Members, back in the 2000 legislative session, this legislature agreed that there, in fact, was a problem with a state mandate, with the legislature deciding to put this runway this close to the community of Richfield, that we needed to participate in resolving and mitigating this situation for the city of Richfield. And I wish Representative Abrams was here, because he deserves a lot of credit in helping us come up with a strategy that provided economic development grants to the city of Richfield. And we began that process in 2000. The city received a $5 million grant to begin purchasing homes, again, that are so very close to this runway. Of course, with the events of 2001, with September 11th, and with our budget situation, we understand that there are limited opportunities for the city to receive grants. And so the community of Richfield is taking upon itself to resolve this issue, but they need some extra tools to do that. What this bill does is it exempts the city from the tax increment financing flight test, and then also they are not limited to, obviously, then to blight correction as a result of this. And also it's an exemption of the five-year rule. The reasons for this, members, is the parcel is fairly large in that it essentially includes much of the eastern border of the city. That will take time for us to redevelop with a use that is compatible with the kind of noise that will be generated from that runway. This allows the city to have the tools to provide its residents with some buffer between that air traffic and impact and the residential living that is so very, very close to this runway. And members, I have with me the Assistant Director of Community Development, John Stark, from the City of Richfield, to answer questions as well. In addition, in the crowd today, I have the City Council member from Richfield who represents the area that it's impacted, Bill Killian. Also with him is the city manager of Richfield, Steve Devich. In addition, we have a couple former legislators who are here to show their support as well. Former State Senator Steve Lindgren, who is now the chair of the Richfield Chamber of Commerce, is here, and we have support from the Richfield Chamber of Commerce. And also former Representative Ernie Lindstrom, who served in the House from 1966 to 1974 and was the Republican majority leader in the 1971 and 1972 legislative sessions. He's here helping to pass this legislation to benefit the city that we love so much. And so, members, we are available to answer any questions. If you'd like a more detailed description, Mr. Stark can give you that. And thank you again for this committee time.
Thank you, Representative Larson. Any questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience who would care to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Starr?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Larson, I think, covered all the bases pretty well. So I would just stand ready for any questions you might have.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandiver. I, too, just want to thank Representative Abrams, as Representative Larson did, and I know Representative Thiessen is here, too, and he's worked hard on this proposal as well. And it is unfortunate that Representative Abrams isn't here, but for members who maybe haven't followed this closely over the last, 5 years, Representative Larson and Thiessen have worked really hard with Representative Abrams to try to find a solution that really makes things a little more tolerable. And as, former Representative Lindgren and Lindstrom, who are here and esteemed and we're happy they're here, know that previous legislatures, long before I think anybody who's sitting around the table was here, made a decision to keep the airport where it is, and that saved the taxpayers of Minnesota $2 billion. A part of that decision meant that those people who had to live near there ought to get some relief, and this is one piece of many pieces that need to be to come to the legislature. So I do want to thank everybody bipartisanly who's worked on this, and I know that last year's working group on TIF spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I think this is a very reasonable proposal, and I hope members will ultimately support it.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Lincheski, can you, since you were working on the TIF working group last year, how common is it for us to specifically set up a TIF district, maybe not exactly like this, but in statute? I just don't know how common it is versus setting out the standards, setting the standards in place.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandiver and Representative Broad. I know that Mr. Michael is still in the room, so he might want to go to that. But what I would say that's really unique about this one, and I don't think it is common, is that the blight test, which gets confusing to members because they think about Richfield and the Best Buy, which is completely unrelated, different blight test kind of issue. This issue is saying that the ground rumble is an effect a blight, in the sense that maybe the structure isn't substandard, but if you're actually living there and it's shaking, it's no longer livable. So it is allowing a tool, instead of actually, quite frankly, I think many people would argue the state of Minnesota should be paying for this, but instead, this just allows the locals to pay for it, and I'm one who actually thinks the state of Minnesota should be paying this. The revenue note is zero. It's just allowing the city of Richfield to have a way through TIF laws with some exceptions to make this happen themselves. And I think, quite frankly, it's getting Minnesota off the hook. But as to how unique this is, obviously we don't have many communities that are experiencing, I think the term is low frequency ground noise. And I'm not quite sure because my community doesn't experience that. These are the people who are literally, the ground is shaking because they're next to the runway. But Mr. Michael may have an answer to how unique this is.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, it's fairly common that cities have come forward with making similar arguments that the blight test, for example, just doesn't apply in the circumstance. It's not very common that the legislature actually grants those kinds of exemptions. I'm sure it's, and I don't have numbers, but it's been done, in a handful of instances, and as Representative Lincheski and Larson pointed out, this is sort of a unique circumstance, and I think one of the arguments that the city makes is that these uses are really incompatible, and if nothing's done, what'll typically happen is that the owners of the properties will allow them to deteriorate, and then the blight test actually will be met, and so they're trying to do some early intervention, essentially, is the argument that they make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brad?
I'll defer if Representative Larson has a comment.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Brad. Mr. Michaels is exactly correct. That is the concern that we have in Richfield. Really twofold. Number one, that in fact that deterioration will occur. And secondly, we want to be proactive in trying to create a buffer between the residential neighborhood that is nearly, and in some cases right up to the Cedar Avenue or the frontage road next to just east of or west of Cedar Avenue. And so we want to create that buffer both from a noise reduction standpoint, but also from a livability standpoint in terms of height of structure, and so that we keep East Richfield vibrant and and economically viable as a neighborhood.
Representative Biden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not, just want to make it clear, I'm not arguing against, I'm just trying to understand the commonality of it. I just have one more question, and maybe knowing the area as you do, you can help me with this. If you had a house, looking at your pink area on your map, if you had a house in that area and a house next to that area, what is the difference in market value between those two properties?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative.
We have looked at market values. To date, they have not typically been different. Part of that, though, is that the new runway does not become operational until October. That's when we'll really feel the effects of the low-frequency noise in the pink area. That's not to say that there's some magic line and across the street the effects are not there. The noise studies that were done by the City of Richfield and approved by the Metropolitan Airports Commission also have further bands of noise impact area where we can insulate the homes to take care of the noise issues. In this pink area, the recommendation was that we remove the homes because there's no way that these types of residences are compatible. What this TIF district would allow us to do, 80% of the TIF gets to be spent in the pink area, at least 80%. With the pooling laws, we could spend up to 20% outside the pink area, and that's one of the things we would wish to do in this next band, is spend some of the TIF at pooled money to insulate homes.
Representative Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you allowing me to ask these questions because I do recognize that they probably are more appropriate for Commerce Committee. But I have one last question in regards to the market valuation or selling of those properties, maybe on the outside of that pink area, the buffer avenues there. Is there disclosures that are put in place in regards to the runway if a person is purchasing that property? Do they know what's going on? What's going on in terms of real property exchanges?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe that a disclosure is required. In the pink area, if this action were to go forward, I do believe that a disclosure that an area is a redevelopment district is required. So if this legislation were to go forward in this pink area, there would have to be disclosures. But in terms of the proximity to the airport alone, I do not think that requires a disclosure.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against the bill? Okay, the chair will lay over House File 1247 for possible inclusion in the committee report. And we will be, for members of the audience, we're going to take up 1267 and 1784. Well, we can try it before session, and the other bills will be after. So, and we are going to meet, reconvene in 500 North, 45 minutes after session. This is the plan right now. Okay. Representative Broad, do you want to move House File 1267?
So moved.
Representative Broad moves House File 1267 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I appreciate you getting us in. House File 1267 is a bill that basically moves a date. Right now we have in legislation something called a special service district that allows communities to and businesses to set up an area and redevelop it. And the expiration on that special service district legislation is June 30th of 2005. Mr. Chair and members, we're simply changing that to June 30th of 2010. Mr. Chair, I have with me Mr. Sandy Keith from Rochester, who's been working with the special district there and can testify to what we're trying to do here.
Mr. Keith, welcome to the committee.
Delighted to be here, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sandy Keith.
Rochester. I've spent the last 3 months setting up a special service district in Rochester. And there's only one other in the state, and that's Duluth, and which went into effect on January 1st. It's a very useful tool. It's not easy. I've been asking all my friends to increase their taxes, you know, in downtown Rochester and for the next 5 years. But I think it is a useful tool. I've had calls from St. Cloud that they would like to consider it. And so I thought it makes sense if we could extend the law. I believe in sunsetting, but I think basically it's a tough law, and I'm glad to explain it to you, but it's something that is a tool which communities can use. We're redeveloping, as we do every 20 years, our downtown area, and we have a special assessment and so forth. So if there's any questions, I'll be happy to ask for. I don't think this is controversial. I hope it isn't.
If it isn't, we can make it that way.
By the way, any description made by Ms. Baker is very accurate.
Any questions for members? Anyone in... Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against House File 1267? Seeing none, the chair will lay over 1267 for possible inclusion in the committee report. And
Chairman, I might add that in the Senate, this is on the consent calendar, so I don't think there's any, there is no opposition there. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair will move House File 1784 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1784 is a... Mr. Chair, I also have a delete all amendment that would put this in the shape that we need to have it in.
Yeah, I do. Okay, I'll move House the H-1784-DE-1 amendment. And you'd like this adopted to put the bill in the shape you wanted it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adapted. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What House File 1784 as amendment, Mr. Chair, allows cities, when they have property that abuts them that is not in the city, say in a township, mm-hmm. oftentimes there's development, a road needs to go in, and there's a problem with trying to put in an improvement such as a street because they can't assess the other side because it's not in the city yet. This basically, with proper notice and with agreement of a township or county, would allow them to go ahead and put this street in and go ahead and put it on. They'd have to have public notice and that sort of thing and put it on the property description, so somebody purchasing it later would know that there's a deferred assessment on that street. So that's essentially what this does. Mr. Chair, I've got the Assistant City Administrator from Rochester, Gary Newman, here also to speak on this particular issue. If I could, I might add, Mr. Chair, the delete all amendment basically is a result of negotiation and communication with the Builders Association, and they're in complete okay with this, in complete agreement with it.
Okay. Okay. Any questions from members?
Mr. Chair, would you like to hear from Mr. Newman?
Oh, you had certainly. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this authority is already provided for cities for sewer, water, and storm sewer. And this would just simply put streets in the same position as for those three other utilities. We started with a simpler bill, and we met with the Builders Association and with the Township Association attorney. They asked for some changes in the bill, and the lead all amendment was what was agreed upon, and that is the language that was used in the Senate.
Sir, thank you. Is there anyone from the townships here? Hey, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just give me a quick difference? I noticed that it just added streets in the original bill. And then now it would appear that the townships and other organized units, if the territories like the county have now a greater ability to have a say in what goes on. Is that the intent of the amendment? Just give me some of the issues maybe that brought us to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the two big changes were the builders group wanted to increase the notification provisions, clarify the notification provisions. The Township Association, they apparently used the statute as well for urban towns, and they wanted the clarification it could also be used for roads. And those changes were made at their request.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one more question. In regards to the municipality reimbursing itself, it reimburses itself for the cost or cost expended. Is there any interest or anything like that that is reimbursable in terms of having the dollars sitting out there and maybe 5 years from now having that land coming into the city and at that point getting that reimbursement, or am I misunderstanding the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the city reimburses itself for the benefit that can be documented on an increase in value. In a lot of cases, that is actually less than the cost. But that can include interest. But it basically, you have to prove value when you levy an assessment.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Representative Dillon?
Mr. Chair, if I could, just to piggyback on top of Mr. Newman's answer to Representative Broad, one of the concerns in the original bill was it was pretty wide open that you could go back after an improvement, then go back and assess anybody going backwards. And that's where the Builders Association very rightly pointed out that's not appropriate. Somebody purchasing property has to know that that assessment is there before they purchase it, and that's what the intent of this is, to make sure everybody understands that.
So is this pre-annexation thing, is that what this is about? Or
Mr. Chair, that is correct, because under the current circumstance, let's say, for example, half the land, one side is in the city and the other side is not. A developer will come in and say he wants to build. He'll pay for his side. He doesn't want to pay for both sides. In that case, a city will say, you know, we're willing to take the risk to put the road in and the utilities in, but under the current environment, we take the risk that we can maybe recover our costs for the water, sewer, and storm sewer, but basically the street costs we just lose and absorb. And so this says that a subsequent day, if you can prove value, you can levy that assessment.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I had all my questions asked. So how does this show up then? Say that property is outside the city limits and it exchanges hands. How does this show up? Does it show up as a deferred special assessment, or how does it show up on the statements?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, my understanding of it, you know, they're provided two notices. Notice when the project is done, the assessment hearing originally, so the property owner who has the property is aware of that. In addition, when you levy the assessment, you'll have to have a subsequent hearing.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. We'll wait over. I'll file 1784 for as amended, for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. And I think, members, we are going to come back somewhere around 45 minutes or an hour after session. I'm going to, and it's 500 North. So with that, we are in recess. We'll come to order. Next bill on the agenda is 6:30. Wilkin, is he here?
Okay, we table the bill permanently, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina moves to table House File 630 permanently. Any discussion?
On favor?
Let me count here. That's what we're doing. Rucavina withdraws his motion. 1139, Tyson. Is there?
I'll move House File 1381, Mr. Chair.
I guess. Representative Rucavina moves House File 1381 to be considered for possible inclusion in the committee report.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious to see what kind of scam that.
Representative Hollis, present your scam, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill will allow Sylvan Township and Cass County to apply a gravel tax
right now 29 counties do that. And St. Louis County does not collect the gravel tax, but they allow towns within St. Louis County to do that. This bill will allow Sylvan Township, in following the proper statutory law that requires them to do that. Cass County has voted unanimously to not collect the gravel tax and allow Sylvan Township to do that. Sylvan Township has also voted unanimously to do that, but we need legislative approval.
Okay, I think we've heard enough for no. Any?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riccovino.
Mr. Chair, do you have an estimate, Representative House, on the amount of gravel that's been taken out of Sylvan Township? You know what kind of
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riccovino, at this time, no, I do not, but if the committee wants it, I certainly can get it here before you make your decisions on what those go in and what those don't.
So there's no number?
There's a standard set tax fee. It's 10 cents per cubic yard or 7 cents per ton. The money has to go specifically to certain areas, 60% road and bridge, 10% for restoration. It's all in statute. So the township is a lot like some of the areas, the suburban areas around the metropolitan area. It's full of gravel, and the roads are just getting beat up. And we've decided, I haven't decided, but Sylvan Township and Cass County decided that the best way to do that would be to have a gravel tax and fix the roads and save some money for restoration.
Mr. Baker, that the aggregate materials tax is defined in statute.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
Mr.
how
Chairman,
much is that?
Yes. It's an up to 10 cents per cubic yard or up to 7 cents per ton.
Okay.
Is what they can.
Any questions? Is there anyone here to testify for or against House File 1381?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riccovino.
You know, there, it is spelled out in law how to spend it, but I think this could be the beginning of the Cass Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board if there was a little money diverted for economic development, too.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riccovino, it's a lovely idea if you introduce a bill and co-author it with the immediate.
So, Representative Riccovino, you think there should be an amount in here?
No. Actually, under current law, it spells out, like Representative Hollis said, how you spend the aggregate tax that you get locally, and I was just suggesting maybe
well, could they
spelled out a little differently.
It says how to spend it, but could they make the tax whatever they wanted then?
No, it's in law.
Or it is set in law.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, the chair will lay over House Bill 1381 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Collins. Well, if no one's here, we can adjourn. The next bill on the agenda is House Bill 1511. Representative Nelson.
Director as well as the mayor of the city of Taylor's County. I'll let them introduce and go with it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mike Buhite, and I'm the mayor of Taylor's Falls. I'm actually serving as a second-time mayor. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Taylor's Falls, we currently have a population of 1,010. And Taylor's Falls is actually located in a very pristine river valley area. Beautiful rocks, beautiful cliffs, and across the river to the east of us, we have this very lovely city called St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. The challenge that we have in Taylor's Falls, and something that we're working on very hard, is to help our commercial properties, our business owners. And what we're looking at is attempting to work on the Small Cities Grant, which eventually would lead to a revolving loan fund so we can help our commercial properties. The challenge that I have is that St. Croix Falls in Wisconsin has a real advantage when it comes to taxes. That commercial tax compared to our Minnesota tax is substantially less than ours, to the point where I look at it and say, why would you want to locate your business in Taylor's Falls when you can take a 60-second drive to the east and locate your business in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin? So what I'm looking at this time is if you can help us level the playing field, give us a competitive, at least level fighting chance. So that's what I'm asking for today. And with that, I'm going to pass the microphone to Chris King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for inviting us and allowing us to come and talk about our dilemma that we're facing in Chicago County and as Taylor's Falls. As the mayor mentioned, we're growing fast. Chris Engel, Chicago County Economic Development Authority. As the mayor mentioned, we're growing on the residential side, but our business side of things is not keeping pace. In fact, we're going in the opposite direction. If you look at our total market value for the city of Taylor's Falls, only 7.3% of it is commercial industrial. And the statewide average for cities is 17.8%, so we're 10% less than the statewide average. And it's going in the opposite direction. We've actually lost two businesses in Chicago County over the past 4 years to Wisconsin. And if you looked at the Osceola Industrial Park, for example, there are 21 businesses in the Osceola Industrial Park, 17 of them in Minnesota.
I'm confused here. I thought we were supposed to raise taxes.
Well, not in our book. And what's going on a daily basis is the state of Wisconsin and the Minnesota, communities in Wisconsin are soliciting our businesses on a daily basis.
Well, what about our quality of life? I thought that took care of that.
It's good. I have to agree. But when you get a letter from your neighbors to the east saying, come on over and we'll save you up to 50% of your property taxes, and we'll save you up to 40% of workers' comp taxes, up to 20% of your corporate income taxes, we just can't compete. And that doesn't include the incentives that are given out on top of that. Once those incentives are done, they're still better off being across the river.
Well, this is confusing. All I've heard for 3 months is that we didn't have a problem with regard to tax.
We do, and we're losing the battle right now. 32,000 jobs were lost in the state of Minnesota over the past 4 years, and it's getting worse. And we've seen it firsthand in Chicago County, and we're losing. And I'll give you a good example. Scooter Schaefer had a company that was a plastic injection mold company. They needed to expand. They couldn't do it where they're at. They were going to build a $1 million facility somewhere. And so they moved across the river into Osceola. They saved over $30,000 a year on their taxes.
Really?
Same workforce costs. Same transportation costs, the same construction costs, the $30,000 a year goes back to their bottom line. It's a huge incentive.
Representative,
what taxes did they save us?
The property tax. The difference between Wisconsin and Minnesota property tax is the biggest one, but that's up to 50% less in the state of Wisconsin. And on top of that, they're claiming that they can save up to 40% on their workers' comp tax and up to 20% on their corporate income tax. And I can show you letters of the
well,
communities are sending letters to our business on a daily basis over here.
That's curious, because during 1995, during the 8 hours of floor debate on workers' comp, I offered the Wisconsin plan, and I don't recall getting one Republican vote on it. It was so good. But regarding property taxes, I know at least homestead taxes, if you look at Superior and Duluth, they're much cheaper in Duluth than Superior. Now, businesses, I don't know. Our progressive property tax system used to, which is regressive as property taxes can be, used to favor homesteads and lower homesteads to boot, and then we used to have three tiers, and now we have basically one and a half, I call it, because, maybe there's a few $500,000 homes, and I don't know who's here.
So we should raise tax.
No.
Oh.
We should probably look at this bill, and I'm not saying that, but the way to pass this bill is to beat up on the state of Minnesota's businesses, because I don't. I mean, I've got articles. I'll go back to my office from Eau Claire and that newspaper saying how great Minnesota's economy is compared to Wisconsin's. But
okay, continue. Yes.
To Representative Brooke Levine's point, and the example that Mr. Ring gave as far as the business relocating to Wisconsin. The business relocates, the workforce stays in our county, because their housing is cheaper, and so, you know, we get to provide all the services, and it puts more and more of an onus onto homeowner taxes because we don't have that CI tax base. And to represent a point on an Eau Claire newspaper article, I don't know how many of the members saw the article in Sunday's paper, but the state of Wisconsin is currently ginning up to attack because they don't like that Minnesota has done some improving and getting businesses to stay here, and a couple examples they gave was some of the jobs east. And in fact, today, scheduled to meet along the Minnesota-Wisconsin border from Hudson through St. Clair Falls, the governor of the state of Wisconsin and the legislative delegation is flying in just to whip up the frenzy a little bit on this kind of petition for commercial businesses.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Cabrera.
Chair, Representative Nelson, Wisconsin lost the Congress. We didn't. We, according to the federal law statistics, labor management or labor bureau, whatever it is, we've produced more good-paying jobs than any other state in the Midwest throughout the 80s and the 90s. So I guess the proof would be how successful Wisconsin's business climate is. I guess I would say, why did they lose the Congress, representative Congress, and we held to our 8 Congress people?
Our people are living here, Representative Rukavina, and they're working in Wisconsin. And you know that congressman goes by population. And while Minnesota, with the statistics you gave, may all well be right on the mark, the fact remains that this border city legislation is very specific, as you well know, to help these cities. Makes a big difference if you're located in St. Cloud or Taylor's Falls, the competition for somebody locating that way. The same way, it's not likely that you're going to get much competition for any of your mining industries from Wilmer. But we get competition along the borders, the same as they do in Moorhead and Gilworth and along the Western Dakota borders too. So that's what we're here for you, members, looking to be included with the City of Taylor's Falls in Border City legislation, and provide at least the chance. Without it being there, the opportunity never will happen.
Mr. Chair, members, if I can also state, we had in the year 2001 a very old structure built in 1886 that actually burnt to the ground. I know the individual that now owns the whole, and I said, so when are you going to put up a new building? And he said, why would I build a new building here? Well, what are you talking about? For me to put up a building here would cost about $1 million. The property taxes on that $1 million building would be about $49,000 a year. Okay, I understand that. Commercial property, that's the problem you're faced with. Yeah, but I can put that exact same $1 million building right across the street there on the other side in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, 60 seconds away. Exact same building is $23,000. That's the difference between the commercial property taxes in Taylor's Falls and in St. Croix Falls. You're absolutely right. I live in Taylor's Falls, you know, and I can look at Wisconsin if I choose to or not. My property taxes on my residential property are about half what they are in Wisconsin. I look at my commercial area, and they're getting beat up. I look at our industrial area, and if you drove through Taylor's Falls, you'd say, where's your industrial park? My answer is, I don't have one. And if you said, where's your plan to develop one? I have a plan to develop one. Where are the businesses? They're in Wisconsin. Why are they in Wisconsin? Nobody's going to build in our industrial park area, even if we had a building or two there. If you can simply take a 60-second drive to St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, and pay half the amount of property taxes in Wisconsin. Well, that's the problem that I'm facing.
If the businesses are that close, why do you want them in Taylor's Falls?
Why do we want the businesses in Taylor's Falls? Mm-hmm. We have room to grow in both areas, but unfortunately in the last 18 months, I've lost 3 small businesses specifically to St. Croix Falls. When asking them why, they said, you have a beautiful city. It's great, you're starting to grow, but the problem is I can rent twice the amount of space for exactly what I'm paying right now. I have the ability to sell what I sell for less in St. Croix Falls, therefore sell more because I have to sell it for more in Minnesota.
How does it hurt you when they leave?
Mr. Chair, the businesses in Gillis Falls pay taxes to the school, although the school bus does not stop outside that building. So from a perspective that we can maintain our services and receive valuable payments to our state schools, where right now those businesses pay taxes to the state of Wisconsin and the schools get nothing.
So we want businesses.
Correct.
Oh. Representative,
I'm moved we amend the bill to blow up the bridge.
can we annex them?
No, let's just blow up the bridge. Then it's pretty easy.
This is Transportation Committee, Mr.
Chairman. Even my toll road ban allows for toll bridges to other states.
I moved to amend that to troll bridge in the first year, and I could get a job outside the legislature.
Okay. Now we learn a lot every day. Anyone questions from members? From the audience, anyone in the audience care to testify for or against House File 1511? Okay, the chair lays over House File 1511 for a possible inclusion, likely inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. House File 630, Representative Wilkin. We'll see who can talk in more of a monotone. Chair will move House File 630 for consideration for possible inclusion. Representative Wilkin.
Thank you.
Do you have an amendment?
There is an amendment,
A1, I'll move the HO630A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted. Representative Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, members, for those of you who have been part of the tax committee for a number of years, this is going to be somewhat of an annual bill because of changes in the way the art park is structured. This is for the Coney Art Park in Eagan, and they've been working on transferring this to a more public-private ownership. It includes ownership by a nonprofit foundation and also part of it owned by a local government. And this property is benefited by the Dakota County referendum passed a couple years ago to buy up open space and to be able to keep this as an art park going forward. And this bill, actually the transaction happened March 1st. After many years in this, the reason why this bill is here is because within law already that the anticipated structure of the new ownership was different. And so we have to tweak it to allow the nonprofit ownership of part of these parcels. That's about it. It's agreed to by both the county and the city. The letter that you're getting is a letter I had on file from last week. It references a different bill number, but it's essentially the same bill. The city supports it, the county supports it. Our park people support it, I support it.
So then what's wrong with it?
I don't know. It was in both schools, I believe, last year.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Any questions from members? Do you have any witnesses?
No.
Representative Wilson.
Are there guns in Eagan?
Yes. I could bring him down to meet you.
I would be delighted.
Do you know Italian too?
I'm half Italian, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of Italian on the range.
No, you know Italian. You can talk.
I'm part of Italian. Non Simon. From the multimedia to the body, the soap and the chain.
You are such an asset to this
group. No, I don't, Mr. Chair.
Anyone in the audience care to testify?
You should hear what I just told you.
Do you have translators in
the
Mr. Hines, can you where were we? Okay. Charlie over House File 630 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Walker.
As amended.
As amended.
Chair, I would move by Representative Campbell in the audience, so I'll move on to 1797. Representative Heason was here too, I guess. He's good. So I'll move 1139 then, Mr. Chair, for possible inclusion.
You sure I'm still the chair? Which one?
1139 is the next one on the agenda.
Lucavina moves House File 1139 for consideration. Representative Keeson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative. The House File 1139, in its terms, is fairly straightforward. It exempts the first tier of CI property, commercial industrial property, which is $150,000 in value and below, from the state property tax, and that the amount of money that's lost as a result of that is shifted onto higher value properties. It's about $66 million in shift. So according to the numbers I saw last year, properties worth up to about $1 million in value are benefited, and then if your property is over $1 million, it will increase your CI taxes. And it also, the other thing it does is it sets in statute the percentage of the state general levy that goes to commercial and goes and is allocated to commercial and allocated to seasonal property at 94% and 6%. Currently, that's kind of just a result of the value of the property, essentially. And it approximates what the split was in 2004. It actually benefits seasonal property a little bit.
So does this shift on to the... This would shift it then on to this... Commercial, industrial, and seasonal?
It would not. There's no shift onto the seasonal property. It just shifts on the commercial side. It shifts from the lower value property. I mean, for lower value properties onto the next tier of value. So, if your property is worth less than $150,000, you don't pay any taxes anymore. And every property, the first $150,000 is not taxed. And then the value of that shift is shifted onto the remaining value that's above the $150,000 for all of the commercial properties. It doesn't affect seasonal properties.
So would this teach Wisconsin a lesson?
I have no idea. The idea is just to provide some assistance to small businesses and smaller value property owners.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen. Thanks for bringing this forward. I think as we look at the seasonal rec right now, and some of the concerns was the general property tax going up quite highly on that, and one reason because the seasonal rec values are going way up and commercial industrial is staying about the same, so there tends to be a shift right now. And if I understand this bill correctly, you now would have two separate areas, so what's happening right now would not hit the recreational properties as much. Am I correct in my assumptions? Would this bill prevent some of these shifts that are now going on with the rec properties as far as the general property tax? I don't know if you can answer that or staff.
It's my understanding, but why don't...
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, that's correct. This, in addition to, in order to adjust the so the shift on this provision only went to the upper tier CI, it also locked in the shares between the seasonal and the commercial, which would have the added effect of, in the future, not allowing that shift that's going on that you're talking about.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Markford, it's all on.
Yeah, well, thank you, and I appreciate that, and it's an excellent bill. Thanks for bringing this forward.
Representative Rick Cavazina.
Well, Mr. Chair, for Rex and Thiessen, or for Mr. Hines or Ms. Baker, how does it work on the school district excess levy now? The businesses still pay, but the seasonal rec property doesn't? So there's no general fund obligation then by doing this as far as school district excess levy reimbursements or anything. Is there any impact whatsoever?
Mr. Hines.
No, Mr. Chairman, there's been no effect on operating referendums or any other aspects of school levies whatsoever.
Well, Mr. Chair and members and Representative Thiessen, I had, if you recall, an amendment last year, I believe it was, to take the cabin taxes off of the statewide school levy. And at first I was going to shift them to apartments, but because the apartments in this state seem, especially large ones, seem to have gotten a benefit of, more of a benefit of the tax, 2001 tax bill than any other classification of property. But then I thought, well, I couldn't get, you know, the votes, so then I just shifted it onto CI property. And I think I even got Representative Simpson, and I don't know if Representative Lanning voted with me. I got a few Republicans. I got you, I know. But I don't think I got you, Representative Simpson, if I recall correctly.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of
sure you do.
So, but, you know, but your bill is kind of creative, and it's great to see you supporting local Main Street businesses, as Democrats already have. The problem with this whole deal, though, is the in 1 year, my amendment cost, I think, was $27 million, and this year it's projected to be $42 million, Mr. Hurd. In 1 year, the cabin owners of this state, and a lot of them being local, have gone from a $27 million obligation to $42 million. And it's going to keep going up. You know, businesses, even if they're under $150,000 in value, can pass the cost of doing business, at least some of it, on to their consumers. Most of these cabin owners can't pass this cost on to anybody, and I don't care if you're a rural legislator or a metro, you know the that going to the cabin in the summertime has been a Minnesota tradition, at least for as long as I can remember. Now, we don't have Auntie Gloria's cabin to go to anymore because she couldn't afford to keep it because people from the metro area came up and placed the cabins, but that's a whole other issue. But, you know,
anyway,
we have to do something, Mr. Chair, on this statewide property tax issue to help the other side, and that's the seasonal rec owners. And I'm glad that Representative Thiessen has come forward with a bill to help small businesses, and I support him, but we, as a tax committee, should look at the whole issue because it's not fair to have done what we did to seasonal rec owners. Hey, if you want to tax out-of-state seasonal rec owners with a statewide property tax, I'm sure that's constitutional.
That was another fine idea from the Senate. But
yes. Well, Mr. Chair, we've got to look at it, and I've got some ideas that I hope that you would support as enthusiastically as the IC is supporting this bill.
Because cabins are where family happens. Did I say that right? Representative Brad.
Where families are created many times, Mr. Chair.
Wow, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure how to follow that.
Try not to be as long, first of
all. Wow. Representative Thiessen, I sense there's a large number of issues actually wrapped up into the bill that you're bringing forward. One is the small business issue, and I think that's an important issue, making sure that our Main Street stay viable. And Representative Rukavina, you said that Democrats have done a great job with small businesses, and I hope then you will vote with us to keep taxes in check, because small businesses are absolutely finding it very difficult to survive in the environment, both regulatory and tax environment, that we have here in the state of Minnesota. So I'm hopeful that you'll follow that through and vote with us on some issues that keep taxes in check for those same folks. Seasonal rec, I also agree that there's a lot that we need to do in that regard. There's a number of bills that people have brought forward, and I think this is a piece of that puzzle. The concern I have is that Dan Scott is actually employing you to bring this bill forward from South Dakota. Dan Scott's the Sioux Falls Development Corporation, because my concern is that when we shift the additional burden onto those larger corporations, that those are the folks that actually have the ability to actually lead the state versus our Main Street businesses that are the folks who are living in those communities in a different way. So my concern is that shift onto those higher valued properties, forcing them out of the state possibly, or just adding to their tax and regulatory burden too. So that's a concern I would have with the bill.
And
it wasn't just, by the way.
To piggyback on that, so you could maybe touch them both at once, you could have $1 million commercial building that's divided into four with four small companies in it. So, needing response?
Well, as to that point, I'm not an expert on that, but I know there's rules about how you can divide up, if you have a, how the property can get divided up for purposes of valuation and whether you're within the first tier or not. And maybe someone from research can address that a little bit more. Am I correct on that, that there's rules and statutes set up about how that is calculated?
Well, Mr. Chairman, keep them there. The taxation goes to the ownership of the parcel property and not to how many businesses are located within the property. So, divide. You know, if you had four different businesses renting out one commercial property, it would still be taxed as the higher value. I don't know if that exactly gets at all the questions, but
is that what you were asking?
Well, I was just following. I thought they were similar. You could maybe touch on.
Well,
but what?
And as to Representative Broz, I mean, yes, that I think is a policy decision we need to make. I mean, my sense is that that this shift in amount spread over the whole state is not going to be the incentive that's going to drive someone. You know, particularly I think, and I see our folks from the city of Minneapolis are here today too. But I think probably in the metro areas where you can find a lot of these higher value properties, I don't see them shifting to South Dakota. I think you're actually more likely. I think there's more likely that you may find some of the smaller businesses doing that because of the geographic proximity. Some of the stuff we were just talking about with the last bill. You know, so I think that issue cuts both ways, is my sense. But I don't think a business is going to make a decision to leave because of this, the amount of this shift. And we did give a lot of commercial property tax relief in 2001, which I think should, you know, address some of those concerns as well.
Mr. Chair.
To that point, Representative Rupina?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair. To that point, to Representative Brad's point. Representative Brad, you know, that 2001 tax bill did not really do a lot to help little Main Street businesses. In fact, I just got an email today from a pharmacist on the Iron Range whose taxes have gone up over $1,700 in the last 2 years, property taxes. So oftentimes, Representative Brad, you know, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce's position is not the position that helps either Fairbanks Main Street or New Prague's Main Street or Virginia or Eblis's Main Street. It's just the exact opposite. So, you know, we have to be kind of cognizant of that fact when we look at what happens when we do tax policy around here, who it really helps and who it hurts. That's, you know, as far as Iron Range, maybe Iron Range businesses, Main Street businesses are just a little more, I don't know, intelligent or whatever, because they know that, you know, the more money we put in their consumers' pockets, the more ends up with them. So they like, and most of them are Democrats up there, and they just love the fact that there's unions and people make $40,000 a year and have health benefits and everything else, because then they spend more money in the stores than somebody that makes minimum wage.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brad.
I just wanted to thank Representative Rukavina for the education since I wasn't here in 2001. And I prefer to look forward as opposed to backwards. So I want to make sure that we're moving Minnesota in the right direction.
Well,
I
Mr.
think
Chair.
That taxes need to be in check.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Just one. You have to know where you've been to know where you're going.
Mr. Haynes or Ms. Baker could tell us what happened to the rates on $150,000. Commercial industrial building in 2001.
Mr. Chairman, the rates were up through 2001 have been 2.4 on that lower value home, and they went to 1.5. They were somewhat in. I think they were approximately in line with other rate reductions. Not that one. The first tier commercial did particularly better or particularly worse than most other property classes in that.
But it got a substantial reduction in rate.
Remember the rate does not tell the whole story because
yes,
they come under the state tax and they didn't
right.
Used to.
So net of the, including the state tax, was there a reduction equivalent to other classes of commercial, or was it?
I'm Mr. Chairman, being very general, I'd say it was equivalent to, but not particularly greater than other classes of property. We'll do more work on that if you'd like. But.
Okay. Representative Lanning.
I have worked, been working on this issue with regard to the general estate tax, and committee members should be aware of the fact that seasonal recreational values, as everyone knows, have been rapidly increasing. And they've gone from about 4%, something over 4% of the tax, to now over 7% in the last few years. And so, Representative Thiessen, your bill is certainly a step in the right direction with regard to fixing that proportion at 6%. I have a bill that's yet to be heard that would take it another step further that I would like to see the committee give consideration to as well. But we've seen a real shift here of the general tax over to seasonal recreational. And I think it's about time that we address that issue.
Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Mr. Hines knows the answer to this, or Representative Mark or Lanning or someone might recall. When we had the Minnesota Taxpayers Association study on how the taxes were falling on, I believe it was in your committee, Mr. Chair.
I think that was.
We heard a concern that outstate small businesses, I think, I'm not sure if I'm correct on this, were that group of properties that their taxes were still very high. Maybe it was all outstate.
Nationally, yes.
Companies, both large and small. I can't recall. I don't know if anybody here knows, but the Minnesota Taxpayers Association was kind of harping on there's this group of properties outstate, thought it was small business, that that they could not explain why their tax burdens were still so high. All CI outstate. And I don't believe Representative Pete is probably here to, you know, to the, as a person who doesn't represent outstate, I mean, that's probably not his personal goal here, but I think it's something that we need to think about. We know that when you push down taxes for someone else, they come up, you know, somewhere else for somebody else. But I think the complicated part for all of us in thinking about this commercial industrial, what's the right split between the small and the big business, not only the, you know, popping up somewhere else, but it's always unclear to me in looking at the incident study that when you make a change in a business tax, you're trying to hold the property part of the thing that's making the change, but there's all this other stuff going on with the national tax average, what the sector of the market they're in is doing, and then the majority of these business taxes are passed on to consumers anyhow, either in lower wages or higher prices. So, you know, I applaud you for trying to do something here. I don't know how you, without infusing more money, pick winners and losers between all these groups, but I appreciate you coming forward. But Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Hines knows what that study told us. I thought that Representative Marquardt and Lanning and I that day had a discussion about those properties.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanchesky pulled out the study, and at least the one part near the front, which talks about rural commercial, shows that on the low value commercial, which was a $100,000 property, that the tax in Minnesota was 17% above the national average. For the higher value than $1 million, it was 46% above the national average. And then, let's see, for a $25 million property, it's 51% above the national average.
This is an
outstate.
Mr. Chair.
You can join the real caucus now?
Mr. Chair. Just for my friends from the metro area, you know, Virginia isn't out of the state, and nor is Sabika, or so we don't call, we prefer Greater Minnesota, and we're going to start calling you Lesser Minnesota, if you keep calling us out of state.
Okay, Representative.
Greater.
I thought you had your hand up. Okay, any other questions from members? Anyone in the audience who care to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none? Yes. Mr. Haynes.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add one more piece that I did now look to the industrial. I mean, in the industrial, it's not nearly as as out of line. In fact, the low value industrial was actually, I think, below the national average, and the million was about 10% above. So much more of a commercial problem than an industrial from the Taxpayers Association study.
Thank you. Representative Rukamina, do you want to move House File 1140?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 1140.
Oh.
Recommend it for passage and possible inclusion in the omnibus.
First, I should lay over House File 1139 for possible inclusion, and Representative Rukamina moves House File 1140. Representative Faison.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. 1140 for now?
Yes.
Oh, 1140 is an attempt to get at the following issue. When one government entity or subdivision takes property and converts it from taxable to non-taxable property, there can be a significant loss in the tax base to other government entities that there's also property tax being paid from those properties. And that issue is not always accounted for when one government entity is making a decision. And one example that arises from my local circumstances relates to the expansion of the airport and the taking of substantial property tax base in the city of Richfield. Now that's done deal in the past, and so but that's kind of an example where the city of Richfield actually lost a substantial amount of property tax base. And you heard a bill earlier today about kind of related to that, the TIF district in Michigan. So what this bill is trying to get at is that loss in property tax base by some government entity should be considered by the person making the entity making the acquisition, and that part of that acquisition price should be used and increased, in fact, to kind of phase out the loss of property tax base that these other governmental entities will face. So that's the issue that I was trying to get at, that you have these circumstances where all of a sudden you have this substantial drop in property tax base. This is trying to get a way to at least ease that in over time. And so what it does is it requires the acquiring government body to pay other taxing jurisdictions essentially for those lost property taxes, either over a 5-year phase-out schedule or 150% lump sum payments. And there's a couple of safety valves put in. The first is that the other government entities who are not making the decision to acquire the property can waive the payment. So, for instance, if there's a road that's going to go in and the other government entity thinks it makes sense, it's going to improve our city to have this road go in, they can say, we're not going to demand the lost property tax base for that. I think one thing that will accomplish is to get everybody that's affected to the table to talk about, you know, what are the effects of these things and how can we work it out in a way that makes sense, at least the most sense for everybody. And the other thing is that if a property is taken for redevelopment, so it comes off the property tax rolls for a while, with a plan to put it back on the property tax rolls, this provision wouldn't apply. The only other thing I noticed is that we already have a similar thing in statute currently for regional metropolitan parks. So if that authority decides to acquire property to build a park, there is this kind of a phase out mechanism in place. So that's the bill. And I think there will be witnesses on this.
I would assume, okay, is there, would anyone, Representative Marquardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen. Just a question. I know in cases in rural Minnesota where you have maybe two or three communities that each have schools, but then they consolidate and end up building at a third site, many times in a township or maybe in that city. Would this bill follow that? The school district then would need to pay to the township or the city where it would locate, because I presume it would go from land that was taxable to tax exempt. Would that apply?
It would, although I would imagine that it would, is the answer. I would think, though, that in some circumstances there would be an interest of everybody to get to see the school built, and there can be those discussions and the waiver. But yes, it would apply. So it applies to any government subdivision.
Okay, testifiers for or against? Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Intercounty Association, and joining me is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities.
On behalf of counties, I'm in favor of hearing in opposition to this bill. This bill will increase the cost to counties for building courthouse and other county facilities, for building county jails, for acquiring and developing parkland, and most importantly, from our perspective, it will significantly increase our cost for acquiring property to build or expand existing county highways. I'm not sure that I really can say much more than that. We frankly find it ironic in a session that many are looking for increased transportation funding. The net result, if this bill were to pass, would be to effectively decrease our net resources available for dealing with the transportation problems facing us. So we're quite concerned if this legislation goes forward. I will mention that we think there are already mechanisms within the current law, within school aids, local government aid, and perhaps some of the county programs that already take into account the loss of tax base. We think, frankly, those provisions are sufficient to compensate the affected jurisdiction whose property tax base is lost through the acquisitions that may come under the confines of this bill. I'll be happy to answer questions after Ms. O'Rourke has not presented her comments.
Ms. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer Amart, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Like the counties, we view this bill as a little bit of a mixed bag for cities. Substantial large tracts of property are acquired for a highway or regional facility such as an airport. This bill will mitigate an otherwise abrupt loss of property taxes and shift those to other types of property. On the downside, city acquisition of property for roads, parks, or redevelopment purposes could become more costly.
Okay. Questions for the testifiers? Anyone else in the audience care to testify for or against the bill? I can't read that. Okay. Yes, I have one question. Do you have an idea how much that'll increase? I mean, if you're getting money sometimes from the county and giving money sometimes to the county, and same with the county, how do you have any idea what?
Mr. Chairman, I frankly have no idea of the extent of this. It's obviously going to depend on the acquisitions, the taxes that are paid on the property. One year, it's possible that a jurisdiction would be a net gainer under this provision. Next year, they would be a net loser. But again, our long-term concern is that for our projects, it will increase our costs. We frankly do not have significant concerns. There are certainly instances where large tracts of property are acquired by DOT or other third-party entities, and of course, you know, we do suffer the loss of land space, but that, unfortunately, I think is one of the prices of progress, and we're certainly willing to forego those revenues to get enhanced in our transportation infrastructure or whatever else is occurring. So we do not believe this bill is necessary.
Okay, somebody mentioned that you're already doing it with regional parks. Is that what I... That was, is that correct? Do you know anything about that, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, members, don't know the provision verbatim, but I believe that is the state of the current law, that the acquisitions that are funded by the Met Council do have this provision to pay off. I might also mention that there is also another provision in law that for DOT's acquisition, to the extent that the property is temporarily allowed to be occupied until the actual construction occurs, that there are new payments on that, and the provisions of the current property tax law provide that in other entities' acquisitions where there may be a temporary occupancy of the acquired property, that there, in effect, property tax is paid on that leasehold.
Representative Tisa, did you want to comment on the my question.
About the metro parks?
Yes.
There is a provision, and this bill we drafted 2 years ago. And I think Ms. Baker and I had a discussion that I think it's in like section 480. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there is a provision that kind of this is modeled on.
This is modeled after that. Okay. It certainly hasn't slowed down one of the counties I represent, I think. Well, county will be a park pretty quick.
And Mr. Chair, I think the point that you made about the cost, that I think that there is shifting, there would be shifting back and forth among the entities. But one thing Mr. Carlson mentioned is that with some of these road projects, you know, the counties are willing to forego those costs because they see it as an important price and important development. And I think that the waiver provision in here, you know, will get at some of those issues, you know, so there will be some.
You think it'll get at the road one? Because that is kind of a touchy subject.
I think that if there is a city that is coming wants to improve a road and need to take some property, I think in a lot of cases, the cities and other affected jurisdictions are going to say, you know, that's important to us. Now, there may be cases where that's not the case. You know, this will maybe lead to some additional discussion about that. I spoke to Mr. Carlson before the committee and the league, both Mr. Carlson from the cities and the county beforehand, and you know I'm willing to work with them. I told them I'd work with them more on that issue of the roads.
Excellent. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really had a question for Mr. Carlson. Would you oppose if the state takes county lands that are paying and says, we're going to take that land and it's not going to be paying property taxes anymore. Would you want the state to compensate the county for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lincheski, as I said earlier, you know, we may not always agree with the exact routing of a DOC financed and constructed facility, but in general, we just view this as being the price of progress of improving, whether that's 694 or Highway 52 or whatever, and don't believe that compensation to us is necessary.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Ganniger. I actually wasn't thinking about roads. I was just thinking about a parcel that is paying taxes or is scheduled to, and the state comes in and takes it from the county and no longer pays property tax. And I'll give you a couple examples. Now, I think you do not represent Hennepin, is that correct? But you represent the other metro counties?
Besides Randy.
Okay, so maybe this doesn't apply in your case, but similar. When we had all those stadium bills in the past, they were, most of them didn't take property taxes. So if you were going to get, you were a county, like Anoka, you were going to get a Viking stadium, or you were Hennepin and you were going to get a stadium, that piece of property would have been permanently removed from the property tax, even if it was scheduled to pay a lot of property taxes. And I guess one of the things I really like about Representative Thiessen's bill is, you know, some of the things that are floated here is to take one of the highest valued pieces of land in my city and have the state run a casino on it so it can get money. It would explicitly not pay property taxes, and so that the investors, in my case, my residents have invested $10 million into that parcel, we would not only be paid back, and we would never see a nickel of property tax. So, you know, it works both ways. I mean, there are times the state could be the thug and take the money from the, take the property from the city or the county, and then I think the county may be in saying, wait a minute, you know, we were expecting, for example, the people you represent benefit dramatically by the fiscal disparities pool, which is predominantly raised in Hennepin County. The biggest payer into the system is a building in my community, and the other counties all benefit from the existence of that because it pays huge property tax to that fund that's then distributed to all these cities. You know, you can see scenarios where you take these large pieces of property off the tax rolls by the state, and then the county is the one losing the money, or the city is losing the money. So, I mean, I just want to highlight, too, it cuts both ways, and I think if that were the case, the counties may be in saying, hey, you just took a bunch of property tax away from us, and I just could comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lincheski, I can't comment on all the scenarios. With regards to the stadiums, I think you know that Hennepin County is actively promoting the construction of the stadium, as is in Oakland County with regards to the license stadium. So they're quite willing to forego the taxes on those parcels. I hate to try and pick and choose and say those situations where we want to have compensation and those situations where the lack of compensation is okay. I guess I'm just here today saying in general, we don't believe that compensation is either owed or should we owe others compensation for properties that we acquire for a public purpose, traditional public purposes, whether it's roads, parks, county facilities, or jails.
You were talking about PILT, right? Anybody else that wishes to speak either for or against?
Mr. Chairman, just to represent Lenchesky's point there, we do have payments, you know, that will cover some of that, especially in the rural areas. So I don't know how that plays into it. It certainly doesn't play into the casinos and make them all and stuff, but the PILT payments are in order.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll lay over House File 1140 for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Marker.
I'd like to move House File 1797 for possible inclusion under the committee report.
Representative Rick Trimba. Representative Trimba, proceed.
Chair. Joining me today is Representative Westheim because we both have constituents that have issues dealing with the report from Billings. Basically, what this is, what I call it, is blue water. Why you got interested in this is we both had farmers who have Lakeshore on their farm property, and the county assessors have decided to classify that land seasonal rec instead of agricultural. And so what this bill does is it actually allows the farmers to have it reclassified and you probably get all read the summary, but basically you have to meet five criteria. It must be unimproved land or at least 200 feet shoreline within 400 feet of high water mark. And it has to be homesteaded or owned by a family member for at least 7 years, and the owner must survive. And the owner must sign a covenant to keep the land undeveloped. If they would choose to at some point decide to develop it, they would have to pay back 7 years of the taxes that would have been at the rate of seasonal rent.
Question for Representative Trimba. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Trimba. A couple of questions. Is this the Blue Waters legislation that's been proposed in the past?
It's similar, yes.
No, it is. It is. This is
okay.
This is exactly
what.
Okay, sure.
Representative Trimba, I really appreciate you bringing this forward, and I do think it gets back to some of our discussion on assessors and some of their judgments. I mean, anyone can clearly see this is not recreational, and there's a number of property owners in my area that have this very same situation, and now will this still prevent assessors from putting a market value on it that would represent recreational versus ag, for example? Or can they still, even though we're getting lower property classification rate, is the market value still going to be whatever the assessor wants it to be?
Representative Trimba.
I was married to the county commissioner for 6 years, and we had to assess their problems even at that time. And so nothing really prevents them from doing anything unless you appeal it and there's an appeal process. And I actually didn't do that. It was some land that I had that was on ag land, but I had some trees on it, and so they tried to take the tree part and make it seasonal rec. But I appealed it. And appealed it and finally won. And so you can win, but a lot of people do not know that that you can lose. In fact, I have an assessor in one of my counties who tells their the property owners that there's no way to appeal their taxes. So every May I have to do a press release to tell you how to appeal your taxes. So to answer your question, hopefully it won't happen. It wouldn't happen. And it would be classified at a lower rate, and so hopefully it would be assessing it based on the other farmland you're on them. So I'm hoping that really would happen.
Does your person want to weigh in on this one?
Sure. Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Simpson?
Well, I think this is a good bill, and it's got some things in it that we've been talking a lot about, but I think I would want to take and step it up one step farther, because I think some of the bills that we've heard and the things that we've witnessed this session in this committee would indicate to me that this probably would not become farmland for a very long period of time unless you classified it pretty tightly.
Representative McCumber?
Do you want to suggest what you
would prefer
to be the kind of amendment you'd like to
see? Representative Markle would certainly be open to specifying that it needs to be valued as ag land or whatever you're thinking.
Well, I would think maybe Mr. Baker might have some comments or thoughts on it also, but I just see this being done, and within just a matter of a blink of an eye, it's going to go back as rec land.
Yeah, no. Representative Kimber.
That's an interesting point, because when I appealed my piece of property, it doesn't immediately start going to turn this back every year, or do you have to appeal? Mm-hmm. They didn't, but that was
the threat was there.
The threat was there. Mm-hmm.
Does the department want to weigh in on this one, Mr. Hagan, or not? Just because it's such a fun topic for the last few months. You've got more things to do with in your city.
Mr. Chairman, John Hagan, Department of Revenue. With respect to the way Representative Otremba portrayed the issue that happened with some of the constituents were with some of the counties were taking land that abutted agricultural land that abutted a lake and classified as seasonal recreational. That certainly is not consistent with the law. So, the provisions within the law, but the use of the property is what is supposed to constitute the classification of property. If the property is being farmed, I don't care if it's against the lake or if it's in Bloomington, it should be agricultural, it's farmland. We do have in current law, we have a green acres provision that provides evaluation deferment where properties which are adjacent to a lake, for instance, agricultural properties they have two different values, one on the developed potential value and one on the actual farm value. And that would seem to be a clear application. Any kind of farmland that's waterfront, it would clearly be a poster application for the Green Acres program.
Thank you. Representative Westrom, did you have another comment or question earlier that I missed? Thank you, Mr. Hagan.
Not any more than Representative Oshemba had, other than just a personal issue past spring when I was conducting my town meetings. This was one of the issues that this farmer specifically came into my meeting for. Jash was going to relate. In his instance, he was actually a pretty small farmer. I don't remember exactly the parcel, but it was under 100 acres that he had left in the family farm and didn't want to be paying higher property taxes. And Representative Otremba put this bill together. I asked her to sign on to it as well, because I think it, as Representative Simpson, Mark Horton, and others, and probably yourself too, Mr. Chair, it seems common sense, but not doing this really does the opposite effect and forces development, because at some point it's cheaper to sell the land and get out from underneath it than having to keep paying higher property taxes on it when it's not what your intended use is at the time.
Exactly.
Other comments, questions? Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson from the Metropolitan Intercounty Association again. One of my members is St. Louis County, who's concerned about the provisions of this bill. I've also been asked to convey the comments to Steve Kuhla, who's, I think most members know, is a representative of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers and is the assessor for Kansas County. First, I want to make clear this bill does not affect agricultural land. The provisions on page 5, lines 7 through 8, specifically excludes agricultural land from its provisions. What it does affect is owners of unimproved or restored lakeshore that meets the requirements of the bill, 200 contiguous feet of unimproved lakeshore with depth within 400 feet of the ordinary lakeshore. And it may provide a temporary tax break to those individuals by the classification reduction from either 1 1/4% to 0.6%, roughly a 40% reduction for most of the affected properties. But the price of that is a tax increase on all the other property owners in the jurisdiction. I don't believe the committee has the Department of Revenue analysis on this bill, but that analysis, which has a cost of roughly $55,000 in fiscal year 2007 and $63,000, anticipates a tax shift or the tax increase on other property owners of roughly $50 million a year. Lion's share of the people who will be paying these increases are in fact cabin owners, the people that so many of the members have been expressing concerns about. So another thing the bill will not do is it will not preserve lakeshore. It will, as I said, provide a tax break for the owner of this particular property. But what's driving the disappearance of unimproved lakeshore is simply demographics. It's the maturation of the baby boom, who has shown itself willing to pay any price to buy lakeshore. One parcel of property may stay unimproved by this, but another parcel of property may see the price go up enough that it will incent them to go ahead and sell off that piece of property. It will also, as I said, not affect ag land because it's specifically excluded from the provisions of this bill. And I say it's also unnecessary. If, as has been conveyed here, the assessors have inappropriately, I would agree with Mr. Hagan, classified the property as seasonal recreational residential, they have two different venues, either an administrative appeal or a judicial appeal, to appeal that that classification. In addition, they have the current green acres provision to have the valuation of that property reduced to its value as farmland and ignoring its value as development potential as lakeshore. I'd also finally point out a couple, one final point before I get to Mr. Kuhla's comments, and that is if the objective is preserving lakeshore, is it simply unnecessary? There is a current provision in law called a conservation easement, which provides both tax relief to the owner of the property as well as provides for the long-term preservation of that property in its unimproved state. Mr. Kuhla's did want to highlight one administrative issue. There's frankly basically no penalties for individuals who fail to abide by the covenant other than paying back the back taxes for up to 7 years. So it's quite possible that you could have somebody who comes in and files for the covenant in 2006, gets the tax break by having the class rate reduced from 1 1/4% to 0.6%, and then turns around and sells that property in 2008 for development, has for a cabin, for a home. The only penalty that individual pays is the back taxes for the 2 or 3 years that they've enjoyed that reduction. There's nothing else in this bill. And the metro assessors can give you plenty of examples of that in fact happening under the Metropolitan Act Preserves Law, which this is patterned after. Again, it does not have a lot of teeth. Again, it will not preserve Lakeshore. It will give a temporary tax base to people fortunate enough to own these properties at the cost of increased taxes on all other property owners in these jurisdictions, which, to a great extent, is going to be cabin owners. I'll conclude my comments at that point and be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Trimble, would you like to respond to? First up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple things. There aren't going to be a lot of people that are going to actually do this. And when you take some of the land out of being a development area, the land around it naturally is going to go up in price because there's less glacier land. Paying back, at least they're paying back. And some of the other easements he was talking about are permanent. These are not permanent. I think we had a huge discussion in the last year with permanent and temporary easements as far as land in the East Rural Minnesota. And so sort of the same testimony I think he gave 2 years ago. So I think there's a place where we need to do this, whether it's farms or resorts are having the same problem. They're being taxed with everything for, very expensive individual homes on the lake, and they have no desire to sell that. These are farms that many of them are have been in the family for generations, and they have no desire to develop it, and it's fair for them to be paying a price that's like somebody who's going to sell a lot. Like, there's a place for this.
Other questions or comments for any of the testifiers? Anybody else that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Yes. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Jeff Forster with Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners, so cabin owners. And we've been talking about blue waters for many, many years now, and we support it. The problem has been to find escalating market values on Lakeshore, and people that own large tracts of Lakeshore, as these values have spiked in the last 3 years, are really getting hit, and their solution is to sell off lots and subdivide. 37% of the private forest, of the forest land in Minnesota is privately held, and much of that is Lakeshore. So anything that we do that will help limit the development of Lakeshore will help Minnesota's water quality a great deal. The DNR tells us that one of the main causes of water pollution or surface water contamination in the state is overdevelopment of Lakeshore and the subsequent activity that comes along with it. The idea that the current conservation easements address this problem, I distributed a report from the Minnesota House on conservation easements, and they're permanent. And so they're not very widely used, I don't think. And as far as the argument goes that they reduce your property taxes, there's an income tax benefit, an estate tax benefit perhaps to putting the property in a conservation easement. But a lot of our members have reported that once they put the property in an easement, the assessor says, well, it's the same value. So now you can't develop the property and you're still you're on the hook for the property tax. So there's not a property tax impact in many ways. The idea that it would reduce the available land and force up prices is perhaps true. But in terms of Mr. Carlson's comments about the assessors, I think they're being very short-sighted because ultimately it would raise the value of the land that exists. Another report article I included was the following numbers. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Bemidji State University last year did a study on the effect of water clarity on property values. And they determined that increasing the clarity of a lake by 1 meter increases the value of a front foot of lakeshore by $423 on average. Decreasing the clarity by 1 foot lowers property values by about $594. And I think this is a very strong argument in favor of blue waters. If the development is slowed to a certain extent on the lakes, I think it would benefit the counties in the long run because it would improve their tax base. I've also heard people say that this bill is being pushed by developers who are trying to protect land. But that isn't the case either, because you have to own it for 7 years and you have to pay the back taxes when you get out of it. I mean, the claim that it would cost $50 million doesn't seem very logical to me either, because not everybody's going to enroll. I mean, this is assuming that everybody enrolls, and if you look at the past conservation, at the report I gave you, these conservation easements have not been very widely used. So, I mean, I've thought about this a great deal, and I can't think of any reason not to pass this bill. It has support from all the environmental groups I've spoken to, and I've heard that the Minnesota Taxpayers League thinks it's a good idea. I mean, it's broad, based. The idea that that owners would, you know, want to sell their property, the average cabin in the state of Minnesota has been in constant ownership for 25 years. That's the average. 83% of cabin owners do not want to sell their property, and 30% of those hope to pass it on to their children. So, these are the people that would be enrolling their land in the blue waters. These are the people that are calling me and asking for this bill, cabin owners, so cabin owners do support it. I guess I can take any questions.
Any questions anybody has? Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just a few things, and it's kind of a follow-up to some of Keith's comments and a couple others, is Blue Waters has been around for a long time, but it really has always been meant to address the person that really is classified as a seasonal rec property. And the language is pretty clear that it can't be ag land, and that it really has to be shoreline and lakeshore property. So, you know, one of the problems, like with Representative Otremba's constituents, is that, you know, I think Green Acres just is not used nearly as much as it should be, because that program is out there for counties like Todd and like others that really have more and more of this kind of property, that they really should be classified as what is the value worth for farming purposes, and then what is it worth for highest and best, and you get into that higher value, which really is the lakeshore, the development and all that. The other thing is that the Blue Waters bill here doesn't have any protection on value. I mean, in fact, it really does not mean to address at all what the assessors put on for value. It's rather, it moves it into a 0.6 class rate, which therefore gives it a significant class rate break, plus, in a lot of cases, moves it out of the state general tax. So that's a huge break if it's seasonal rec class and it's moving into a classification that doesn't have to pay that tax rate. You know, that's going to get a big break. But it doesn't really, there isn't anything, and I think Representative Simpson brought it up, that there isn't any part in the bill that says, you know, the assessor shall classify this or shall value this as if it's ag. And that's one thing that's in the Green Acres provision, is it actually tells the assessor, you value it at ag value and then you value it at highest and best. So really, the bill here is more meant to address what Mr. Forrest is talking about, and that is people that have large feet of shoreline, the 200, 300, 400, some people, you know, obviously have large amounts of shoreline that they want to, you know, protect. The other thing is I'm not sure I understand about the covenant, because, you know, when one says there's not a penalty, Well, to me, the penalty is you can't get out of the covenant. The covenant is part of the record on deed with the property, and it's binding, and it says you can't do anything with it. And I guess to the degree if people actually do something with that land, even though the record says that you can't, you know, that's never been brought up, I don't think, to the committee. But it actually is a binding covenant, and it's actually recorded with the property. So, you know, I don't quite understand, you know, if there is a penalty issue or if there should be a penalty issue put on there. But anyway.
Representative Turma.
We're having an impossible time getting our assessor to even do a green acre.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this discussion.
Yeah.
He absolutely says there's no green acres in my county.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is huge.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some major problems with some of these things.
Yeah.
Literally will not help or do green acres in my county.
Yeah.
And so it's huge. Yeah. And then when you have them raising the property taxes adjacent to the water, that's part of their farmland. That's huge. So there has to be some way that we can figure this out, because it sounds great because it's in statute, but it's not happening out here. And something has to be done. And we have all, I mean, I've talked to, I don't know how many people have, after this bill was introduced, came and told me a story that was similar to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so something's wrong and something has to be fixed somehow. And so, I mean, I've been trying to talk to ministers, and I shouldn't even be talking because it's a state law, and it still hasn't happened. Maybe some year. And then we have this other problem with the water, and somehow we have got to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mr. Hagan and his people have been working a lot of overtime this summer, given what our experience has been like this winter and this spring. And they've got quite a thing.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, well, Representative Brookline.
Chair, I think, you know, you've heard a lot of the times that, I mean, Representative Otremba has given a good example of, you know, sometimes you just have to pass a bill to show a bureaucrat who passes the law in this state. And I mean, this is a very good example.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it for his county employees, and Representative Otremba is doing it, and I think all of us, Republicans or Democrats, should support her wholeheartedly on it, because obviously somebody is just saying, I don't care what your law says, I'm top dog here.
Mm-hmm.
It is a system run amok, that's no doubt about it. Representative Otremba.
When
people go to appeal
their
taxes,
they're told there's no way to appeal. I mean, and then when I talk to him about it, he goes, well, it's too complicated. I
said,
give them some credit.
Well,
Chair, I think they just found a way to appeal.
You're the new appeal processor, Representative Otremba. Other discussion on this bill? Another witness?
Gary Bodzik for Minnesota Lakes Association. I just want to put us on record too in support of this legislation. We've been working on it for a long time, and it's the House has been a very good recipient to listen to our arguments. It needs work. Ms. Baker, I think, is right to tighten it up. But another tool that needs to be in the toolbox, Representative Simpson's got a bill for us on tightening up the shoreline development rules and regulations that we'll be dealing with next session. That we've developed with DNR's help. We also, have heard from Dennis Osmond's bill, Representative Osmond's bill. We're talking about $80 million a year to clean up our contaminated or impaired waters and lakes. Mr. Carlson talks about a $50, $60 million shift, and I can appreciate that, but we're here asking for a handout of $80 million a year for 10 years to clean up some of the mistakes we made. And those mistakes are far, and many of us have participated in those mistakes. And we need all these tools in the toolbox. We can't do it with general funds alone. We can't do it with tax policy alone. We can't do it with regulation alone. But I think we have to, as a policy body, look at all those three and see. And this one needs to be ratcheted along to help, because our members are both seasonal and homestead people. And you've heard the stories. Many of them are in your constituents. The evaluation and the pressure on those lake shores is immense and tremendous. And the evaluation is very difficult for those people to handle as far as the tax rate is concerned, let alone to try to protect that shoreland that may have been a resort or a small campsite that they'd like to at least protect the shoreline and put locks on the rest of it. That's very difficult financially to do. And this bill, Mr. Chairman, would go a long ways to strengthen that tool in the ever-necessary toolbox. So I'll stop there and take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for any of the testifiers? Anybody else that wishes to speak on this bill, either for or against? If not, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1797 be laid over for possible inclusion. And that's all we've got. We will not meet until next week, we're told. Meeting is adjourned.